Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. We are just back here after an unbelievable weekend of European knockout rugby in the Champions Cup, in the Challenge Cup. There's other stories to talk about, and we're going to get into all of it over the next, probably 7 hours. So, strap in.
Yeah.
How are you doing, JB?
I'm very well, thank you, mate. How are you?
Good, and well done. We've worked out how to actually start a YouTube feed at the same time that we start the actual podcast.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, maybe a few more gremlins to iron out, but yeah, good enough.
Baby steps. And Phil, how are you doing?
Hello. Very good, thank you, Tim.
Hello. Hello to Hayden. Hello to Otis, who are on the live feed on YouTube. Yeah, we do that on a Sunday night, so, it's Monday, isn't it? On a Sunday night normally.
Yeah.
So
yes.
If like me, your other half just watches Line of Duty and you haven't got into it, then
You're not into Line of Duty?
I've never watched it.
I'm not into this season of Line of Duty. And you've got to remember, Line of Duty is nothing about the story. The storyline's rubbish. Everything's rubbish. It's all about Ted.
So I've watched the first two seasons of it, and I couldn't stick with it just because I think some of the overarching storyline is really, really good. But the certainly in the first two seasons, the character dialogue and the interactions between the characters...
Hello, Steve. How are you?
It is awful.
Mate.
And the main guy who's supposed to be like a hard nut cop investigating cops.
Jed Mercurio, is that the guy? Is that the one who everyone talks about?
I don't know. Steve Arnott is DCI hunk.
DCI Arnott. I don't know the name of the actor who plays
not
him.
A hunk.
I don't know if Jed Mercurio is the name of an actor or a name of a character. I've got no idea.
No, the main guy is from Northern Ireland, and I think Northern Ireland is, if you're going to do a UK cop show, your main hard guy or your main cop has to come from Northern Ireland. They just do cop characters better than anyone. Like the guy who was the cop from Peaky Blinders? No, the hard...
I haven't seen that show either.
I have not seen Peaky Blinders either.
People from Ulster make the best hard cops.
Like McCloskey.
Yeah, exactly.
McCloskey would be a tough cop.
It's just the accent. You know that they mean business.
DCI Stockdale.
Exactly. Not so much...
DCI Jared Payne.
Yeah.
Right. We are at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking in your DMs. We're on YouTube, where we put videos up through the week as well as this podcast, which, well, ordinarily is always there for you every single Monday morning. An exception on this particular occasion because we're recording
bank holiday.
Which I realise I only found out today. Americans don't have Good Friday or Easter Monday as bank holidays.
Did they not?
As federal holidays, sorry, I should say.
Yeah, they get very, very few standard holidays in America. Yeah.
So apologies to our American listeners who've been waiting an extra 24 hours, as they let us know about. But
And apologies to them for talking about a TV show that they've never seen.
Correct.
Yes.
Yeah. We have so much rugby to talk about, but I first think that we should just touch on the fact that rugby returned in the last 7 days.
Yes.
At amateur levels.
It did.
JB, you would have had a training session at Didsbury Tok H. I took my lad along to his first mini rugby session last Wednesday night.
Good. Although he's not so mini now, is he? What are they playing?
I don't know. What's under 13s?
I think it's under 13s.
Junior? Did it go mini junior?
It might be in junior.
Yeah, I think he's junior now, yeah.
I don't know.
You have 3 years of juniors and 16s, you go to Colts, don't you? So before you know it, Colts.
Whatever it is, he loved it and they got absolutely flogged. And it was nice to see a lot of numbers down there. But
good.
I did go for a walk yesterday and could not believe the amount of cars that were parked up everywhere. It was great to see, and the amount of pitches that were full. But of football matches happening.
Yeah.
Which is a worry. Yeah. That's a worry for me, being that rugby's a long way off actual games returning, that there are football matches going on all over the place.
Yeah, I mean, it can be a worry. I would just say this, like, you know, Broughton Park, where you'd have gone, has always had like 3 rugby pitches and 26 million football pitches. So, yeah, it's just one of those things. It's easier to facilitate. You don't need to be as dedicated. Yada, 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 yada. I wouldn't worry about it too much. However, listen to this. So I went to rugby training on Tuesday. Now, putting aside the fact that rugby training was absolutely awesome, like it usually is at Toc H.
You were coaching, of course.
I was not coaching. I was running about
nice.
Like a deer. We play in Fallowfield, right? In Fallowfield Park. We don't play there, but we train there because we've got a lovely 3G surface, Rubbercrumb. And on the outside of it is this bank. So the bank must be, it's definitely over 6 foot because you can't see over the edge of it. And I ran to training, and as I was running there, I started
humble brag.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's more of a sprint.
I ran to training.
A sprint, yeah. It's more of a continuous 7 kilometre sprint. As I got there, I noticed more and more young people who, you know, look relatively well dressed up, or dressed up, I should say.
Yeah.
And by the time that I got to training, even though there's this little bank and you can't see anyone, you can just see each other, we could hear nothing, absolutely nothing, except for music, people talking. We could hardly... there were points where it was genuinely hard to talk to each other because there was so much noise. And it turns out on the other side of this bank, 3,000 people.
Wow.
3,000 people in Fallowfield.
So did you go and pick up some cans and get amongst it?
Do you know what? I did ask, shall we just go? I thought, no,
sack off training.
Yeah. Hello, fellow students. So we didn't do that.
Just to people that are watching, I apologise if the audio is cutting in and out, and hopefully the audio hasn't just cut in and out as I've been saying the audio is cutting in and out. That would be ironic.
It wouldn't it just?
We will work it out, but I think we might need to get a different bit of kit than that.
That's not the problem. That's the problem in the Wi-Fi range.
Oh, okay.
So the Wi-Fi extender.
All right. Well, we're working on it, but be patient with us, please.
In terms of training,
yeah,
I'm going to training on Sunday.
What?
Who's training?
I'm going to Rugby Tots.
Who are you?
For Thomas.
Wow.
Is he old enough for that? Because I've been looking at Rugby Tots for bloody ages.
Yeah. Wilmslow Rugby Club are doing a little 7-week. Rugby Tots is the brand.
Awesome.
No idea what it'd be like, but I think it'd be quite good fun.
You've got him a little full kit of any
he
description?
He gets sent a kit as part of this,
I might
see if I can... He's got an old England kit, but from when he was like 9 months old, so
love
it won't fit him now.
Are you going to prepare him for it?
I'm going to prepare him mentally.
Like shouting at him?
Yes.
Telling him he's worthless?
Yes, I'll be doing that.
Yep.
Pointing out all of his major flaws all of the time.
Yeah, exactly. Good.
Very loudly and aggressively.
Yeah, do it in front of his friends too.
How much did you enjoy this round of 16?
Bloody good, you know.
Which we never get. It's usually to a quarter final after the pool stages. Due to the change in structure, we got this round of 16. And as an experiment, would you prefer to see it again in future?
Damn right. Look at the scores.
Yeah.
Just look at the scores.
I would be happy to have this, because I mean, under normal circumstances, a pool of four, so you play each of the other three teams, you play them home and away, so you've got six fixtures from the pool stage. It feels like a lot of fixtures that are, by the end of it, kind of dead rubber fixtures. So I would much prefer shorter pool stages and straight into knockouts.
We are thinking alike, Phil, because I was going to say, I think the beauty of this is I can explain it in a couple of sentences. My structure for the Champions Cup idea, which is such a good idea, they will never do it. 8 pools of 3.
So 24 teams.
24 teams. You get one team from each of the three leagues in, so you have no replication of domestic games,
yep,
which is a bonus.
Good, yep. Well done, nice.
And then, you can see the way it's drawn. There'll be a clever way you can do that. But it, effectively, 8 pools, one team from each league in it. Top team at the end of 2 home and away games, which would have to take place over 6 weekends. So same amount of time.
Yeah.
Because one team wouldn't play. So you get more rest weeks. You get more rest weeks.
Yeah. So there'd be 6 weeks of game weeks, but you'd only play
four games
in the 6 weeks. Yeah.
So you would have...
Which is good for...
So much like the weekend we've just had where you have 8 games, it's enough that you can make a big... feel like a full weekend, but not so many that you end up missing loads.
Yeah.
So you get 6 weekends of 8 games, or no teams that you already see them play against, so you get the special bit of the Champions Cup. Top team gets a home round 16 match. Yep. Second place gets an away round 16 match. Third place go to the Challenge Cup. Yep. And then when you get to the quarterfinals, it's just an open draw like the FA Cup.
Oh, very wow. Nice. So,
and semi-final.
So, yeah, so no predetermined seeding. Because, so you're straight into it.
Because you've got the top eight teams and just and you've earned the right to be there.
Yeah. Would you then have home and away? Sorry, for the quarter. If you're having no seeding, would you have home and away?
Well, you could do a seeding thing,
although I don't think home and away works very well for rugby.
No, I don't think it works well for rugby.
What would Racing do with Edinburgh? You know, like 56-3.
Yeah, they've put 50 points. Some of the other games could be nice. But yeah, I prefer not. It's just the... I think no seeding suits better home and away, whereas seeding, if you have seeding, the better seeds, higher seeds will deserve. They've earned the home games.
You could do some seeding, but what I like about it is it's less but higher quality games, less dead rubbers, no replication of domestic matches.
Yeah.
And
until later on in the tournament.
And none of that best runner-up thing. It's just top team gets a home tie, second place gets an away tie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. So I like this round of 16. I thought it was cool.
Yeah.
It was awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd definitely have more knockouts.
So I guess we all start with Leinster Toulon because you were there.
Or I was there for the non-game.
Well, there was that weird feeling. How did you find out?
Well, you won't be surprised to hear that the administration of rugby wasn't very forthcoming with information.
That's not the game that I know.
So, I no word of a lie. Right, bearing in mind, BT Sport is the main broadcaster for the UK and Ireland. Mm-hmm. You would think somebody from the governing body of the sport would have some line of communication with your broadcaster as things like this are unfolding.
Yeah, that sounds reasonable.
I was literally, before I did a little hit with Brian O'Driscoll, I was scribbling down on a bit of paper, and to the point that I could barely read what I'd written because I was crossing stuff out and writing it down. Up to about 30 seconds before I was live, I was scribbling down stuff from tweets that were being put out by EPCR, Toulon, Leinster. I had absolutely no idea until everyone else had any
staggering
idea.
Yeah.
That's absolutely staggering. So you didn't know until how long before kickoff?
Well, the decision was made at 1:30 p.m.
And who is making these decisions then?
Well, so what happened was, on the Monday, all of the players from Toulon and Leinster had their routine COVID tests.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
All negative. On Wednesday, they have another test. One Toulon player, a front rower, not a French international player, so it didn't have a knock-on effect for other French teams, had a positive test. They contacted EPCR, who said, isolate them at home and travel.
Yeah.
Fine.
So the rest of the squad travelled on the Wednesday, Thursday. The
rest of the squad and staff travelled on the Thursday.
Yeah.
On the Thursday night, they had a COVID test in the whole squad. All came back negative.
Yeah.
And then on the Friday, by 1:30 p.m, the game had been cancelled. And as I understand it, the Irish government were involved in that decision.
Wow.
And said to Toulon, it's about the contact tracing, so the people that have had close contact. So in the case of Toulon, it was all the front rowers, all six of the front rowers that they took with them were the ones that couldn't play. And as a result, they said that the Irish government's suggestion was you can play the game on Sunday if you replace all six front rowers.
Jeez.
Wow. Well, just like... So you're down to, you in that ruled out seven front rowers. Yeah. You'd have to get six who are at that point in time on Friday over in France to fly to
Imagine
Dublin.
Imagine sucking into, I know, what are they, like croissant and like frog's legs on Friday night. And you get a phone call. You're up. What? Like some academy prop.
Yeah. So the only other thing that's relevant in this discussion is that, do you remember the Scarlets game in the pool stage between when Toulon went to Scarlets?
Yes, when they, that was Toulon who cancelled it, wasn't it?
Well, yes. So EPCR's rules say that the team with the positive COVID test are the ones that forfeit the game, hence Leinster progress to the quarterfinals. Back in the pool stages, Toulon go to Scarlets and find out on the day of the game that a player in the squad got a positive test and has isolated, but Toulon were not satisfied that the people that have been affected by the contact tracing weren't isolated as well, and that some of them were on the field. Consequently, Toulon said it's not safe to play.
Yeah.
And well, you know, Scarlett's got awarded the points.
I guess you can't.
No. Just to be clear. And in that case, Scarlett's got awarded the points. So all I'm saying is EPCR have followed the rules this time. Now they've been clarified. But Toulon's point is, same thing happened before and we lost. This time the opposite happened
and we lost. Yeah.
So they feel hard done by.
I don't blame them. But on the other hand, I don't really blame the Irish government for doing this. I mean, they're not very far advanced with their vaccinations. Guess it is a risk for them because they've just not got their act together.
It's a PR game as well, isn't it?
So, yeah, what are you going to do? You can't just play it. You can't just play it and then put that message out to the rest of your population. That's one rule for one and another for another. So,
yeah, sad. I totally agree with that.
And do you know what the sad thing is about this, really? The rugby I was looking forward to so much because Leinster are obviously the best that the Pro 14 have to offer. Mm-hmm. And they're the only ones left in, I think, from the Pro 14.
Yep.
Yeah.
But Toulon are interesting because just looking through their team, they've completely reinvented themselves. They are now full of French international stars. So I think they might have been bigger back in the day on our shores because we knew all the names. But you look at, like, they've got the French captain, they've got the backup scrum half, they've got all of these lads.
And Etzebeth and Taufa Fanua at locks.
Taufa Fanua's ace. Etzebeth's pretty good too, I've heard.
I've heard he's all right.
Yeah, academy lad, right? So, like, they are a serious proposition now. I'd love to have seen that game. But
they're not doing very well in the top 14. I don't think they're a team yet, but they're a team on a journey.
On a journey, indeed. Yeah. But, I mean, maybe they're not doing very well in the top 14 because, I don't know, the top 14 is awesome.
Because there's a few good teams.
There's one or two, isn't there?
There's five who've made it through. Obviously, Toulon didn't, but five other French teams have made it through to the quarterfinals, and they played some nice stuff here and there.
Yeah.
So which games did you watch this weekend, Phil?
Most of them. I watched the Gloucester-La Rochelle. I watched Wasps. I watched Munster. I watched Exeter. I caught the second half of Racing, but I don't know why I bothered. I watched Bordeaux, and I only saw bits of Sale Scarlets.
Well, luckily, I watched the Sale game with quite some interest.
I did. I'm always kind of relaxed about missing the Sale game because I know if I don't cover it in depth, you might be able to do some of the heavy lifting.
Well, I guess the most important game of all these then would be the La Rochelle game. How did La Rochelle go?
La Rochelle. It was an interesting game. It was a bit cagey. And Gloucester's defence, he was a great commentator's curse. Gloucester's defence was holding well. Hugo Monier kind of praised the Gloucester defence for holding well.
No.
And then, literally, as he was praising them, La Rochelle burst through and scored a 40-metre try. La Rochelle, they've got some power. They've got some firepower in their outside backs. Or their centres, really. Bottier and Raymond Rule are huge.
They're not bad, are they?
France have just got explosive. A ridiculous number of steppy wingers. Retier for La Rochelle is another one. But there's so many of those teams across the weekend.
Yeah, Villiers, who we didn't get to see for Toulon, is a big one. Obviously, Colby is...
Cordan for Toulon as well.
Labelle, the young Toulouse player.
So Stuart Barnes was saying in the Times, I didn't see this game. So Stuart Barnes said it was a masterclass of halfback play. I don't know if you picked up on that. He said, I think he referred to it as one of the best bits of halfback play that he's seen in a long time. And
any specific bit?
The passing apparently of Kerr Barlow was meant to be absolutely outrageous.
Kerr Barlow and Yahya West are lovely halfbacks, lovely composed halfbacks who get kind of the best, but I was before the game I was expecting La Rochelle to do a number on Gloucester and it was closer. Gloucester put in a better performance than I was expecting. La Rochelle, even though they've got all that firepower, they struggled to break them down at times. So I think Sale will have a chance going there.
I mean, they'll have a chance. They'll have more than a chance.
Well, they went to La Rochelle a few years ago and couldn't live with them, but
yeah, but they
didn't have the pack they've got now.
But I believe they also played lads like James Williams at 12.
Yeah.
So they went with a slightly lighter... Hang on, was that the home game or away game?
Because they played them away in the knockouts.
Yeah, is that knockouts?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, so they went with not a weakened squad as such, but maybe not their absolute top team for some reason. I don't know why that was, but I remember that game. Now, I think looking at these two teams, I think... Sale have got more than a chance. Although I do love Danny Preissel. I think he's just like a superhero.
Danny Preissel is wicked. Lavani Bottia. Lavani Bottia is the argument. I've never been totally convinced by it, but he is the argument to give Sam Simmons a try in the centre.
Yeah, you're not wrong. The bench of La Rochelle impressed me. What's his name? The guy who plays 10 for France.
Pleasson. Jules Pleasson was on the bench. Gregory Aldry was on the bench.
You don't describe Jules Pleasson as the guy who plays 10 for France. You describe him as the guy that Courtney Laws folded in half.
Yeah. Yes.
And Demarou. That's one on that.
Demarou.
Who's absolutely class.
And you can bring on Uini Antonio to shore up the scrum as well.
Yeah, that will be a tasty encounter.
And Ronan O'Gara has come out of the weekend with a lot of credit.
So David Flatterman tweeted, if I had unlimited money, I would want to buy a team to put Ronan O'Gara in charge. Yeah. Is that a justified comment?
Well, they're second in the top 14.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing very well. And I think it was mainly the reason he was saying that and why a lot of people are giving him a lot of credit is he just spoke so brilliantly, as he always does. But he just spoke so brilliantly after the game. He's got a very clear philosophy of how he wants to play, and he can communicate that, and he's willingly communicating it on TV, which suggests to me that he's also implementing that with his team with pure clarity.
I think La Rochelle have played Sale a couple of times.
Yeah,
I'm just going back. I've seen Ronan O'Gara coach his team because I sat right next to him at the AJ Bell. Him, Jonah Gibbs, and there was another guy there, and they were losing their mind, absolutely losing it. So it's interesting that he came across so well, because I actually thought when they came over to the AJ Bell, I wasn't that impressed with how they carried themselves. Not that you can tell much about that, but they were certainly very, very animated about what was going on for 80 minutes.
Ronan O'Gara, I can't remember what acronym he used, but he used three letters.
ROG.
And it stood for, like...
ROG. ROG.
I'll tell you what it was. KBA. He went, KBA, keep ball alive.
Ah. sometimes simple isn't easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they look good.
Yeah, they do look good, but credit to Gloucester, because... It does sound a bit patronising because they lost at home, but
pat them on the head. Well, good try. There's your medal for effort.
This La Rochelle team is significantly better than the Gloucester team on paper, and Gloucester made it very tough for them. And young George Barton, who is just a kid, and I mean at the start of the season he would have been, I don't know, third or fourth choice.
Yeah,
he played well. He's got a bright future.
Trial by fire.
Yeah, but this is trial by fire. But he's got the best team around him.
Yeah.
He's got Chris Harrison, Atkinson in the centre. He's got Willie Hines feeding him balls inside him. He's got Johnny May on one wing. He's got the people around him to protect him and give him the opportunity to learn. Whereas when he kind of first got blooded into Europe earlier in the season, they got beat by, I can't remember who it was. Was it Bordeaux put 50 points on them?
But then he came off the bench and scored the winning try against your beloved Ulster.
Yes, he did that as well.
Yeah, so I've got multiple thoughts on this team. Originally I was going to say, I don't know if I'd have done this because I want to concentrate on the league. But we don't need to anymore, do we? So I would have done this.
There is no point concentrating. Unless you can get top four like Quinns did.
Yeah.
There's no point concentrating on the league.
No. So unlucky, because that is basically Gloucester's last competitive game now.
Yeah, that's it.
Done. Enjoy your season.
God, that's depressing thought.
Yeah, all over. So yeah, they may as well play the Pro 14. Wasps.
Wasps. I felt sorry for Wasps.
They've got something about... I do like Wasps. I just like the way that they play, their pluckiness, the fact that their players seem to carry on performing no matter what. And to lose like they did was horrendous.
Yeah. To lose that late into the game, when you've been leading the whole game, and deservedly so, it wasn't fluke that Wasps were leading. They played really well, and they matched Clermont almost right across the park.
Lovely feet by Bassett.
That was awesome.
It's like he's defying physics.
Yeah, that was absolutely awesome. And this Clermont team is no joke. This Clermont team is class right through the team. Even like, if you talk about good halfback play, You got Bezzy and Camille Lopez, and then you bring on Morgan Parra to just kind of settle things down and control things with the experienced head. And they can bring guys like Rabah Slimani and Perseli Jarto off the bench.
Yeah, that's ridiculous, isn't it?
That is crazy.
But I thought the best player was George Moala for Clermont, who was just such a handful going forward. Mm. And there's other guys who are absolute nightmares, like Raka, like Pinot, like Matsushima, who was awesome as well. But Moala was just so hard to stop.
Yeah, I wonder how this result affects Wasps going forward, because they're on a bit of a bad run of form at the moment. They had the Newcastle win. Other than that, there's very few bright spots. And I think a win against Clermont would have been exactly what they needed to launch back into league.
Yes, it would. But equally, it would have meant they have to really go for it in a quarterfinal next week. In a funny way, in terms of saving their season, I don't think Wasps had four straight performances in them to win that trophy.
No, they're not going to win that trophy.
So maybe if you're looking at silver linings, maybe playing that well against such a good team and then having a week off before your next Premiership game might actually build a platform that they can then use.
Moving forward. I can buy into that because they were the better team for long periods in this game. And it's only the last second when Matsushima scores, and with the pressure on Camille Lopez slots that conversion, that it actually mattered, or the game fell away from them.
How did you enjoy the performance of Wesley Fofana? I didn't watch him closely, but I know your undying love for the man.
I do like Fofana. It was more about Moala and Penault and Matsushima. Fofana is an amazing player. But he's in the kind of twilight of his career. He can still do a job, but he doesn't have that explosivity that he once had.
Mm. Moala's a beast.
Moala was so hard to stop. And Pinot. I mean, Pinot for the, I think it was the first try, the Bezzy try.
Was that the one where they went like basically the whole length of the pitch?
Yeah, it went from their own 22, basically. And Pinot basically gets... It's a flat-line defence. He's up against Odogwu, and he just kind of stands him up and goes around the outside of him like Odogwu wasn't there.
He's an incredible specimen, Pinot. As in... No, sorry, that's not right. He doesn't have an incredible build. Far from it. He looks basically like an accountant. He's so slender, and yet he does so many good things.
He looks almost like a 400-metre runner type build. He's obviously bigger than that.
Yeah, he glides around, but he just makes people miss.
And he's very, very strong as well. That... I mean, if you wanted to maybe ask a question as to why Doggers didn't get an England cap, even when England 13s were dropping like flies, basically in that try, Doggers came into the line, he had a man outside him, so he was effectively defending in the 13 channel, and Pinot just stood him up and went around the outside of him.
You're not allowed to say anything bad about Odogwu. That's the rules of rugby Twitter and stuff at the minute.
Is that right?
You better not find out. If anyone finds out you've just said anything, any suggestion why Odogwu shouldn't have 20 England caps by now, you're going to get roasted.
I was not aware of that rule.
Odogwu will be playing for Italy later this year. Yeah, I am fairly confident.
I hope he does.
I hope he has a very long and very successful.
I love
Odogwu. His attacking ability is amazing, and he's such a unique player.
Yeah.
But watch that try again. He was the class of Pinot shone through.
Just when you were talking about Clermont a minute ago, it reminded me of something that I've forgotten to bring up on the podcast. But it's going back to nearly the start of March. But. Sometimes, Phil, when you get when you get very excited about certain plays and certain players, in this case, the review of this was, I really enjoyed this bit of broadcasting from Phil. You can hear the lump in his throat / tremble in his knees. Wonderful stuff.
Oh,
he's a ludicrous specimen. He is so massive and explosive. He's so huge, muscular.
I know. What a man, Tuisova.
Tuisova, who they didn't play, ridiculously.
Where is Tuisova?
Came off the bench, didn't he? No.
He didn't start. Whether he came off the bench or not, I don't know, but he definitely didn't start.
Where is Tuisova?
He's at Lyon.
Ah, okay, yeah.
So there was some speculation that it would take Tuas over to start this game in order to win it. it turns out that analysis may well have been right.
You could have had 15 Tuas overs. You need 15 Tuas overs to have won this game.
I mean, there's not really much to say about this other than, yes, Lyon went up quite early, but then they just got absolutely obliterated by Exeter. And I did think Exeter were going to struggle for form. That was my prediction.
And you were absolutely right, they did. I think Rob Baxter's own assessment on 60 minutes was, by the time Exeter, by this point, had won the game and were extending their lead, or were just starting to move away. And Rob Baxter said, we played like a team, wasn't quite in form, and hadn't integrated all our guys back in. And he was the only worry he had, much as you're talking about, is that they didn't have the game in the bank. And Matt Robbacks was worried about that, but he said, fortunately, we've got it together within the 80 minutes.
Yeah. Well, here's an interesting thing, actually, about this format of the European competition and what it makes teams do. So I've been speaking quite a lot recently about the Premiership and how you need your squad to win the Premiership, not just your first team. Well, every team that has played in European competition this week, with the exception of maybe one or two, have all put out absolutely strongest teams, including Exeter. They can't afford the risk of losing this game.
Yeah.
So it makes everyone come out of the woodwork. So yeah, Exeter had to put out their best team, because if they, you know, you get one chance and that's it, gone.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult for them to reintegrate lads in the order they would like to. I suspect they would have liked to have integrated them all, but much slower than this.
Yeah.
Or had a game or two before they get into this.
Yeah.
Exactly. And they could have done last week, but they chose to basically rest their entire first team and play a second team against Gloucester, which cost them the game, albeit they've earned the right to do that in the league. But this was their strongest team. Yeah. I think if subject to maybe a couple of injuries, but even then, I think this is it. This is the strongest team they could possibly have.
53 points?
47.
But like 47 points against Lyon is, I mean,
yeah.
You know, when we're talking about them, they weren't quite at their best and they've got room for improvement. That should fill Exeter fans with a lot of confidence going into a game against Leinster.
Yeah,
it feels like they kicked into gear pretty rapidly after
the wake up. Well, it's 14 points down after 10 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it would have been 100 points had Lyon kept scoring at that rate. the way that Exeter did it as well, they did the Exeter stuff, the two Johnny Hill tries and other crash over tries when they build the pressure. But they also did it out with the backs as well, and they kind of proved the rule, their own rule, that yes, you can stop us if we're going to be putting the pressure on through a driving maul or the pick and go, but that will create the opportunity for the likes of O'Flaherty and Woodburn, who Woodburn has not been playing his best for the last... I think 6 months, he had a bad injury last season. Yep. He's taken some time to get back to form. He was awesome. Woodburn was
defensively
absolutely
so good as well, isn't he?
He's so good under the high ball, so good defensively. He's such a good runner. His break and then pass for the O'Flaherty try, he was just superb.
A few weeks ago, we did people in rugby that let Tadburn go. Tadburn?
Tadburn.
Who's the other one that we did?
Adogwu. Thacker. Harry Thacker.
Lewington. We did loads. I can't think of...
Well, maybe one of the most obscene ones was a dual release of both Ollie Devoto and Ollie Woodburn. And instead of going... Like, usually when you get released... It's for a lesser team, so a team that people perceive as below.
It's because someone's willing to pay the money you can't afford. Like Cam Redpath will have got much more money from Bath than he would have got a sale.
Still had to go down.
Exeter would have got Ollie Woodburn at a very good price, because Bath, it wasn't that he moved to Exeter, Bath didn't want him.
And Ollie Devoto at the same time.
Yeah.
Ollie Woodburn, the year he moved, I think he got either most improved player or player's player.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous. Absolutely ridiculous. Yeah, we'll have him, and on their way. It looks to me as if they're on the way to at least a second final, I would say.
Well, they're playing Leinster.
Maybe
they're
not.
Home to Leinster. Now that will be an interesting game.
Mm. Well, maybe second Premiership final. There you go.
Well, the thing that would give me a lot of confidence, were I an Exeter fan, is that they let their power game work so well against Lyon. who are massive.
They are big boys.
Yeah.
They are big boys.
They absolutely pummeled them in the scrum. Like, Chucky was walking backwards. He was on ice skates towards the end of the game. She's, yeah. And I think it's that thing, Exeter bring on a whole new front row. Ben Moon and Thomas Francis come on. And just
yeah. And Jack Yendall,
well, yeah, and Jack Yendall.
Awesome.
I've spoken about this before.
We've got this,
and I want to talk about it again. But I think we're going to see a change in the way that rugby is played in the back row. I am certain of it. So if you think about the traditional 6-7-8, throw it out the window now. It's gone.
And that would be 7, the link-up man.
Yeah, smaller
Fetcher, Jackler, 6, massive defensive player, huge man, number 8 ball carrier skills.
Yeah, exactly. So that would be your thing, right?
And you the archetypal would be the England 2003.
Yes, think about that.
Backhill, Dallaglio,
100%.
Well, I think now Exeter is the way forward, which is these just mutant 6s and 7s.
Because Vermaelen and Ewers are enormous.
Christ. I mean, like, think about it from a Sale point of view, for instance. Not that, you know, that's the awesome place to go. But, you know, Sale put a Dupree on either side of that flank, and your pushing power in the scrum has just gone up. You know, I mean, I'm not saying that Tom Curry is weak, but Tom Curry has also played 8 for England.
Yep.
So you put your Fetcher to 8 now, generally speaking, during your scrums, or indeed defensive scrums. And then you've got these enormous units either side of your second rows pushing the props forward. You don't need Weenie Antonio because you've got an extra 16, 17, 18, 19 stone man linked onto your prop. I am certain that is the way forward.
With a bigger, much bigger, heavier 6 and 7.
Yeah.
And then your fast guy
Your 8. Either have your explosive fast guy, or your Fetcher, or in this case, Sam Simmons, he does a bit of both.
He does both.
I mean,
yeah.
Ben
Earl's another one.
Ideal for that. So that's where I'd work my back row. Exeter got that from Tok H.
What position are you? You flank at the moment.
I was tired prop. I don't know what I'm going to be when I return. Second row, hopefully. Flanker.
What do you weigh at the moment?
97 today. Creeping back up.
So you are, yeah, you're bulking again for the rugby season.
Yeah, you
season.
Are bulking. No. I'm less than you now.
I'm getting fat.
I'm 94 kgs now.
Yeah, I'm desperately trying to get on to 90 and I'm going up.
Can I just say, just a brief interlude to say, one thing that never ceases to amaze me is how lucky we are with the audience we have at Egg Chasers. The talent, the caliber of people that listen, that are willing to offer their experience, their thoughts, their expertise
in other areas of the world as well.
Oh my god, yeah, because we're talking, like, you know, there's literally like brain surgeons, nuclear physicists.
Can I tell you one which happened to me? It might have been this week, but it could have been last week. So if it's last week, I apologize. Idiot Phil over there, might be me, described the Ever Given as when we take the containers off the Ever Given, it increases its buoyancy, and hence we can float it off down. Incorrect.
Yeah.
Incorrect.
I think that might have been your point.
No, I don't know. Maybe 50-50. Maybe 50-50.
So taking the containers off of the Ever Given would not enable it to be moved?
No. It would sit higher in the waterline, but it would decrease its buoyancy. Its buoyancy is, although I don't believe, he's a naval architect.
Wait, is it like Newton's?
No, so the more weight it has on it, the further down the waterline it goes, the more water it displaces, hence the more buoyant it is.
Okay.
I think.
Okay.
But anyway, the point is, he knows about these things and I don't. And that's the point I'm trying to make.
Anyway, so there are lots of people that have things like that. But equally, we just get messages. Someone's clearly watching the YouTube video. James Dunn has sent us a little DM on Twitter saying, if the Wi-Fi in the rugby dungeon is the issue, I'd recommend power line adapters which use your wiring to pass an Ethernet signal. If the basement is on the same circuit as wherever his router is, and he's sent you a little Amazon link.
Oh, thank you.
Something like this is a simple and cheap solution. So there we go.
It's not on the same circuit, I'm afraid.
Different circuit. So you can then use...
But we do have a Wi-Fi engineer on the case.
Okay, yeah. Fine.
We need to look at mesh Wi-Fi. One of the other solutions.
Yeah. So just if you are watching the YouTube video or you go back and watch it and go, oh, well, the audio cuts out a few times, just know We are just the three of us making it up as we go along. Hopefully that's part of the charm of this podcast. And we appreciate your patience with it. We're on the case. With your help, we're on the case. Exeter, I was very, very impressed.
Yes.
Agreed.
Yeah. This was a classic Exeter performance.
Yeah, I there's something I really love about that 5 metre game, and a lot of people malign it, but the work they do to get in those positions is outstanding. Yeah.
People who malign it just don't understand rugby. They're the same crew that bemoan kicking. Like, yeah, there is such a thing as pointless kicking, but very rarely do pro teams go. They just hoof it up in a panic. Like, there is a plan. The kick chase, the 5 metre pick and drive, these are all integral parts of the game. And if you don't understand them and you don't appreciate them, you basically don't really appreciate rugby.
But the rugby that Exeter play to get to those positions is always awesome.
Yeah. Well, it's like...
They don't pick and go from 60 metres out, do they? They play some great rugby.
Although, I'm sure I've seen them try it from, like, the 22.
Pick and go.
Yeah, they'll pick and go and they'll get a bit of luck and they'll do it again and they'll do it again. And before you know it, in the 5 metres, we'll go and pick our go. Pick and go again then.
84 phases in.
Yeah, it is. I think, generally, as a player, it is one of the most enjoyable things to score one of those tries.
Yeah.
Bar none. That and pushover try are the two most enjoyable ways to score a try. More so than a maul.
More so than an 80-metre interception.
Doesn't do anything for me.
Yeah.
I mean, it's all right. It happens.
Interception's less so. A beautiful backsmash. Like Simmons, I think it was against Harlequin, Sam Simmons scored from about 40 metres.
Oh, yeah, first game of the season.
Did he go around Nathan Earle, I think?
Did he?
He just carved through the middle and gassed everyone, yeah.
Line-out move, burst through the middle, and then step and gas. That is awesome. That kind of try.
Yeah.
It's not pick and go. But yeah, I take your point. It is good. It is nice.
You have to ask Sam Simmons, because, I mean, he scored a few pick and goes and he scored those 40-metre wonder tries.
Yeah.
Well, I guess we'll hand this over to Tim now, because you were at the Munster Toulouse game.
Do you know, I felt so lucky to be there.
I bet you did.
At that game. Okay, so I felt really, really lucky to be there. I could not stop thinking the whole time I was there, I'm so gutted there's not fans here.
Yeah. I bet Munster were gutted there weren't fans there.
If there were fans there, Munster sneak that game, they win that game. Yeah. No doubt.
Munster fans increase the Munster score or decrease the Toulouse score?
Good question.
That is a good question. I don't think Munster could have increased their score much. They took every single chance they had, pretty much.
Yeah.
They played really bravely. They just, man for man, weren't quite good enough. But they played really, really well, particularly after a really dodgy performance in the Pro 14 final.
Munster strike me as a sort of team who are incredibly competent and they maximise their talent. It's not like you watch Munster and go, yeah, not really. They're not Bath. If that makes sense.
So they don't have the high-end talent that Bath have.
Yeah.
But they get more...
They have great talent.
They've got great talent, but they get a lot out of it.
Yeah. I didn't watch the Pro 14 final live. I did watch it in preparation for the game at the weekend. And against Leinster, Munster just played inside themselves. And I asked Johan van Graan before the game, like, you know, this is, you're playing Toulouse, you know the threat they pose and the danger. Do you feel you're going to have to open up a bit? And he sort of played that a bit cagey, you know, when it's on. But they definitely did open up more. And I think that's the way for Munster to go. They've got to have a crack and roll the dice, because they're good. When they play like that, they're really good.
I like how aggressive that they can be. They can really take it to people with Delande. I think Farrell is at ace too. I'd love, surprise, I love big physical centres.
I mean, that is as big and physical as any centre combination in the world. Yeah, they're huge. Yeah.
They are. And Gavin Coombs is a boy.
Yeah.
He is good.
Because those two crash over tries against that Toulouse pack, that is no joke doing that.
So they really took it to him, and I felt incredibly sorry for them losing in the way they did. That said, I mean, two French teams we see go away and sneak wins.
Three?
Which is quite un-French.
Well, no, it wasn't a sneak, sneaking.
Quite un-French.
The two we saw, La Rochelle.
Oh, so the Clermont.
Oh, yeah, Clermont Toulouse. Yeah. Yeah, Clermont Toulouse sneak and La Rochelle.
Is there anything of any note to say about Racing spanking Edinburgh?
Well, hold on. I was going to say Toulouse. So all the talk in the build-up, and you know, quite understandably, I'm not suggesting it shouldn't have been, is Dupont, Untermac, and guys
Colby,
obviously. But Mattis LaBelle.
Yeah,
they've got another star there. He is awesome. Top try scorer in the top 14.
Yep.
And his footwork is ridiculous.
Yeah. And I assume he's come up with Entomac because he's about the same age. He's like 22, 23, something like that. He looks brilliant. It's the first time I've really seen him.
Yeah.
And he's just so dangerous and reads the game so well as well. I mean, this Toulouse team is... It's going to take some stopping to beat this Toulouse team. Yeah. I mean, they've got an interesting game coming up next.
Yeah. But I will just say, I'm hoping that it will get put up on some channel or other somewhere to watch. But after the game, we only had a very short period of time, so I got a quick interview in with Johan van Graan.
Mm-hmm.
But I did have a chat to CJ Stander, which didn't go out on a programme, and it hasn't been put up on Twitter or anything since. But I really hope people get to see it, because...
You get royalties.
No, I won't get royalties. Sorry. I want people to see CJ Stander. The man was, the way he spoke was amazing, and it's everything I love about rugby. He just spoke so honestly, because I pretty much said to him, right, how do you feel? You've just, the Heineken Cup is you know what Munster's about, and you've just played your last game for Munster in that competition. How do you feel? And he had to take a few seconds, because you could see him. I don't mind admitting, felt like
emotional.
I felt really emotional listening to him chat.
Well, there's been some rather unkind things said about CJ Stander. He says he's retiring to go back to South Africa, be with his family, yada yada yada. And I think people in Ireland who are not Munster fans, a very small minority, have said, well, he's been disingenuous, he's gone to sign for a South African team. To which I answer, like, so what if he has?
Yeah, so what?
Has he not earned the right to go and play in South Africa?
His wife lives in South Africa.
Does she really?
She's in South Africa. I don't know whether that's like recent. I'm assuming he hasn't spent the whole 7 years on his own in Limerick, but
and she's Irish.
But certainly for a period of time, his wife has been back in South Africa. He's been completely transparent. It's a family decision, and I totally believe him on that, because he's given up.
I hope he doesn't retire. I do hope we continue to see him play,
because he's 30, turning 31.
Yeah,
so he's got a few good years left in him. Did you see, I assume you did, the post that he put up on as his retiring statement?
Yeah.
I don't know if you read it, Jay.
I think I did, actually.
Because it was really well written. It was a really emotional post. And he explained both, obviously, the good sides and the difficulties in doing what he's done, and the emotion and the number of people who've helped him on the journey and how much he's loved it. It was a really, really nice touch. It came across... He came across really well in it, so I'd really like to see that interview.
Yeah, I like his story. I love the fact that he, someone bothered saying to him, "Yeah, you're not going to make it at 8. Well, okay, I'll go and be an international 8 somewhere else then. Cheers. see you around.
Well, he never came across thinking he'd be an international 8 for Ireland.
He didn't come over as a hooker.
No. But he didn't come over. I don't think he came over with Ireland thinking he'll be a number 8. It was just he'll be a number 8 for the country. He just initially. I don't think he was. I don't know.
He must have backed. I think he probably backed himself able to. But it wasn't a.
He knew
it was not guaranteed. Yeah. He knew you'd have to work at it. Because by international 8 standards, he's not the biggest.
Well, he could play in my formation.
He would be the explosive fast one.
Yeah, two Dupree's either side. It does sound like a situation where everyone is right, where he's not big enough to play South African back row, but it doesn't really matter.
And do you remember how lovely he was at the World Rugby Awards in Monaco?
Yes, I do.
He came and chatted to us, and he could not have been a nicer bloke.
No, he's a very, very nice guy.
Yeah, really special bloke. So, I enjoyed that. And Clement Poitrineau, good-looking fella. And he looks as young as he ever has.
Oh, really?
He does not age, that guy. So, yeah. You're up to date.
He's always been a handsome guy.
Proctino played.
You know, he's the backs coach.
I was going to say.
My dad played,
yeah.
Who probably played with Poitrineau for a bit, actually, a good few years.
I was going to say, like...
He played well, my dad.
I remember Poitrineau dropping the ball for Rob Howley. Come on. Surely be.
Yeah.
Honourable note to Kilcoyne, who in this game, he scrummaged very well. He did all the hard stuff, and then he found himself. I think it was Entomac and LaBelle broke down the left wing,
he had.
I think it was Jean Clean inside him, Jean Clean.
Colby tried to do him,
and it was I think it was Entomac. Entomac had his winger, I think it was LaBelle outside him.
Oh, yeah.
And Kilcoyne only had O'Donoghue, his number 7, outside him. He's effectively defending in the 13 channel.
And there
channel.
Was a big gap between them as well, wasn't there?
Well, he would. Yeah, there was a big gap between him and
his worst nightmare.
Well, Kilcoyne was in the position that Odogwu found himself against Penaud.
Yeah.
Kilcoyne makes the tackle on Entomac. Odogwu missed the tackle on Penaud.
So you're saying Dave Kilcoyne should pay 13 for England?
13 for, well, maybe 13 for Italy, I'm saying. Okay,
yeah.
It was really,
the
really
one
impressive.
Situation he didn't want. The one situation he trains not to be in, yeah, every day.
I work so hard never to have to do this.
Well, sorry, Munster, you're gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just on Munster, one thing I found out chatting to Donnacho Callaghan, which sounds like a name drop, that's not what I meant.
Well, it's exactly
anyway,
what you meant.
It is just this lad, Thomas Ahern, for Munster. They're talking that he could be like generational type talent.
What's he
Paul O'Connell, the heir to the throne of Paul O'Connell. He's a lock.
Is he? Was he in the squad?
No. This is part of the reason why Munster have signed
Jordan Joseph.
They've signed a South African back five of the scrum player, and they're sort of going, don't bring in another Saffa, get this Thomas.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's just one of those names, because I know you love your names to watch. Thomas Ahern.
Yeah.
Thomas Ahern.
Well, I mean, if he is generational, which would be great, and they can play him next to James Ryan.
He and James Ryan were in the under-20s team together.
Together?
Yeah, which is why Munster are feeling a bit frustrated, because they're like, hold on, they were both dominating at under-20s.
How old is James Ryan? I'm
23 guessing. Now.
And
or 23.
Yeah, interesting.
So anyway, so Munster are frustrated he hasn't been given the shot. So anyway, just a name to watch. Yeah, but that's, there you go, that's Munster to lose.
Should we touch on Racing?
Yeah.
Happened, didn't it?
It happened.
They look. If it's possible, they look even better than they have done before.
It wasn't.
And Maxime Machinot looks just as devilishly handsome as he always does.
Machinot looks incredible.
Something
Teddy Thomas
went
looks
horribly
incredible.
Wrong here.
Didn't
it?
What I'm disappointed with Edinburgh is just how much they capitulated in the last 20 minutes. Like, they conceded 1, 2, 3, 4, 5.
God, was that many?
5 tries in the last 20 minutes.
I think if I was Edinburgh, an Edinburgh fan, I'd be relatively furious about this, because they didn't go with nobodies. They're not a bad... Like, the thing about the Pro 14 is, I get it, the Pro 14's rubbish. And I get it that you don't see all the players because the squads aren't on that deep, so on and so forth. But when they go to Europe, it's their chance to shine. And you've seen squads across the competition and the competition below... Sorry, not squads, teams... which are absolutely awesome. On paper, that Edinburgh team should be the equal of pretty much anyone. Anyone in the Premiership, anyone in France. And I say equal, yeah, you can lose a game.
Competitive, though.
Yeah, competitive.
Competitive, yeah.
I mean, look at the back row. Watson, but what's the boy?
Richie Mata. Villame Mata.
Yeah.
Who is...
They should be taking it to people. So very disappointing. Whether Cockers has got his strategy wrong there, or something catastrophic has failed.
So I didn't watch the first half of this game. I only switched on at half time. But
did you manage to catch their 3 points?
I missed their 3 points. Uh-huh. Blair Kinghorn played 10, and yeah. Jacko van der Velde was on the bench,
yeah.
Which I don't know the reason for that. It looks, in retrospect, it looks like a very odd call to do that, particularly when Damien Hoyland. Like, he's a 15, he's a capable outside back, but he's not as good as Blair Kinghorn, and Blair Kinghorn's not as good as Jacko at 10, so it seemed odd. But I might be missing something as to there might be a reason why.
Jamie Ritchie, Hamish Watson, Bill Matter, come on.
Yeah,
come
I mean,
on,
that
boys.
Is that is a class. And their front row is good.
Yeah.
Dave Cherry, we now know, is a decent player, scoring tries for fun in the Six Nations.
Marcus Bradbury's a back row, though, right?
Yeah. So I assume there's some injury or missing some players there.
Yeah, I mean, just reading the names, looking at what they've done in Six Nations, some of these boys, and what they've done throughout their career, 56-3 isn't good enough.
Did you see... So this is another thing on Duan van der Merwe. I've not got an issue with Duan van der Merwe, but his defence isn't good enough for me. I don't know if either of you saw... Jordan Joseph hand him off at so number 8.
He's seen a still of it, I think.
Yeah. Duan van der Merwe is pretty much, for all intents and purposes, he's as big as Jordan Joseph, and Jordan Joseph, who is a kid, he's 20 years old, just put him on the deck in his own backyard, in Duan's own backyard.
He's not enormous. In fact, he's smaller, I would say.
Who, John Joseph?
Yeah. Like, he's more explosive. I mean, I'd be surprised if he's over 6'2".
I don't know. He's not... He's probably a bit heavier.
Yeah.
But he's for all intents and purposes, they are similar weights. It's not like Jordan Joseph was against Darcy Graham.
Well, it's not like Martin Bayfield presenting stood next to Danny Kerr.
No, it's not like that. It's not like that.
Which was a hilarious way to finish the weekend's rugby.
Yeah. Racing...
Formidable.
Racing very good, but we didn't really learn how good they are, I don't think.
They've got to go...
Do they host Toulouse?
No. Toulouse go to Clermont.
Leinster
go to Exeter.
Racing travel to Bordeaux.
Racing go to Bordeaux.
So that'll be a good game. That's winnable for Racing, but winnable for Bordeaux.
Yeah,
Bordeaux are beasts.
It does look like a French team's winning this. I mean, not just because there's five of them in the quarterfinals, but
sure.
It's...
There's some Northern Grits and some South African steel that would have something to say about that.
So some Zimbabwean steel in the Exeter.
The semi-final is going to be done via a draw. So
okay.
You'd like to see an all-French semi-final and then the other one. I don't want to see... Yeah. Oh, no, there's no way. Hold on. Leinster v Exeter. What's the other one? Oh, Sale. Yeah, I'd like Sale and Exeter Sale and Exeter to go through and then have them against each other.
And then two of the French teams, so you're guaranteed
teams.
An English final.
Yeah.
That's an interesting.
Obviously, if you're a Leinster fan, you'd want Leinster, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, they've had enough success.
They've got enough stars on that jersey already. Now,
do you know what the final I would genuinely love to see would be a shootout for the fifth star, Toulouse v Leinster?
Ooh.
Would be very cool.
Yeah.
But one bit of news is the final will not be at Marseille.
Yeah, I saw
which,
that.
I mean, it's lucky for everyone.
Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, absolutely. And again, if you do, I don't know what the deal is with 2023 tickets now, but if you do ever get any, and there's any games at Marseille, whatever the match, even if it was the All Blacks v South Africa, or just it's not worth it. Not in Marseille.
As long as you can fly in, fly out on a helicopter and just get away from there as fast as you possibly can.
I would do Marseille on a helicopter.
Yeah, and go to like Monaco or Cannes or
I'd go to a bar in Aix-en-Provence,
half
an hour down the road. Beautiful little town.
I think...
Beautiful little town away from all the rats in Marseille.
Literal rats.
Literally rats. Yeah, that's not dehumanising humans.
They were rats.
The biggest rats I've ever seen.
Chased by rats. I've only ever seen rats in Manchester once. I've seen rats in Paris, which were quite frightening. I was walking along the Seine. In fact, I walked along the Seine, and I didn't realise it's not something that you do, from what I can tell. Walked through a homeless encampment, which was pretty terrifying, but you carry on going. And literally, about 10 minutes later... The police were fishing a body.
Oh my god!
And then there was the rats, and I thought, I'm going to walk back on the road.
It sounds like San Francisco now. San Francisco, I had an awesome time. It's a really fun city, and the I can't remember the name of that street, but Haight Ashbury, and there's some really cool parts of town. But down on the seafront, it's
Is it not nice?
It's not what you imagine it's going to be. It can be pretty dark.
I'd love to see the seafront on in LA.
Oh, Venice. That's just you get a lot of massive numbers of homeless people.
Do you?
Unfortunately, absolutely shed loads. California is in a really bad way in that sense. But
maybe I'll skip it.
But you get Muscle Beach.
And that's what I'm talking.
Yeah, and you just get loads of posers or people that are doing
perfect
TikTok and YouTube videos that are just doing amazing things. Just watching them is wicked.
I've heard that the strip there is an absolute hellhole, which is I want to do it even more now.
yeah,
even more.
It is fun.
And then
we go see the LA Giltinis.
Yes.
Oh, right. Yes. They play in
the Coliseum.
Yeah, that stadium is class.
Do you know the story about the Giltinis?
So it's Adam Gilchrist, not the cricketer.
No, right.
Is that serious?
Yeah.
Is that the guy's name?
So, yeah, Adam Gilchrist, who...
American businessman.
Australian businessman. Who has various ventures. I think he's originally fitness-based. Type stuff. But he has drinks brands included, and that's why it's... So Adam Gilchrist, the Giltinis and the Gilgronis.
Yeah.
I didn't know that's why it's Gil.
Yeah.
He has, they are his brands. So it's like I don't actually know what the drink is. I assume it's like a pre-mix, like a gin in a tin type
thing. Is it not from his spirits?
Well, it might be from his spirits, but then I assume it's a pre-mixed type thing.
Giltini. JTini? Yeah.
Is it like Aldi, where they do something that tastes just like
the Punk IPA? Yeah, Aldi's exactly. Punk IPA.
Won't be as good as the stuff that you get from premium brands.
Oh, absolutely not.
Obviously not.
Oh, speaking of premium brands.
Oh, do we have a winner?
No, something more important.
Oh?
JB.
Yes?
You are a year older this week.
I am, yes. I am 20...
late 20s.
I'm 37.
Very late 20s. I've got a little present for you.
Don't swing on the antique chairs!
Happy birthday for this one.
Thank you, my friend.
I did wonder what that little bag was. I thought Phil had taken to get the man bag.
No!
What's that? Strong Zero! Oh, wow!
Dare we indulge?
maybe not. No. Now,
one for you, Tim.
I've got you six cans.
Oh, God, that's 6 cans.
Of 9% Strong Zero.
It's called a suicide dose.
What are you going to do? Feed this to an elephant?
Do you know what we should do? We should do
I'm going to have one.
Are you going to crack one?
You're going to have one. Whoa.
I'm dry. I've got to drive home.
I've got work all week.
I would love to. I've got a wife. I've got kids.
Oh, wow.
God.
Can I try a sip of yours rather than have a can of my own?
The early parts of Japan, England are flooding back to me. But only the very early parts.
Do you know what that tastes like? I'm glad I've experienced this now. It tastes like what you make in the park in a bottle when you're 14 or 15, 16 or something.
So easy to drink.
Yeah, so easy to drink. Almost too easy.
That's dangerous for 9%,
really,
isn't it?
Really dangerous.
What are you drinking, Centauri? -196.
Degrees, I mean, C.
That's below absolute zero, is it not?
I thought my absolute zero was like 2.7. Well, it was absolute.
It can't be. I mean,
zero.
I mean, it's colder than liquid nitrogen.
-273 is absolute zero.
Okay, so not quite.
Or zero Kelvin. I mean,
by all means, JB, just drink them.
Drink all six of them.
What I was going to suggest is, if you do save a few, we could do a special podcast with some Strong Zero stories and other listener Q&As whilst enjoying some Strong Zeros.
Oh, God, that would get incoherent towards
the end. I think that's the thing we get emailed about most, is people, their stories
strong
whilst
stories,
drinking
yeah.
Strong Zeros.
I can't believe you just cracked a can. Insane.
You're going to put on my suit and sleep on the street now.
if you have a Strong Zero story or any other point or question or anything, it's contactdavechasers@gmail.com.
Bristol, Bordeaux.
Yeah. This was a shock to me, because I see Bristol as a team that can overcome absolutely anything.
And I don't think they were far away from overcoming this. I mean, if I were a Bristol fan, I'd look back at a couple of the decisions. Mm. The Jalibert try, the potential Higginbotham knock-on for the Dweeber try. And Dweeber, I love this guy.
Yeah, he's awesome, isn't he?
He's class. He just looked so dangerous, so explosive. And even with those decisions that went against Bristol, Bristol was still pushing, and it was fine margins, like the Higginbotham knock on that led to the Dweeber try, or not knock on that led to the Dweeber try. Bristol were 5 yards from Bordeaux's line. That easily could have been a Bristol try that puts them right back into it. And the scoreline only went so far to Bordeaux because of that, and then the interception right at the death that totally killed the game. Bristol were not far away, but they were forced by Bordeaux to play right on the edge. And this was something that Bordeaux did brilliantly.
Mm.
They disrupted the breakdown in the tight, and their defence was awesome. They read everything, so they really shut down Randranda and Piatau and all the other threats, and Morahan and Purdy and Sheedy and Leura, yeah, and Piers O'Connor when he came on, and Nathan Hughes and Ben Earl. Like, there's so many threats right across the park, and Bordeaux really did a number on shutting Bristol down.
Yeah, not an easy team to shut down, Bristol.
They're really not.
And I mean, for context, it should just remind you know, I don't think Bristol will be surprised about the results, and Bristol fans shouldn't be, because it went to extra time at Ashton Gate in the Challenge Cup semi-final only a few months ago.
So, do you know how many calories are in a strong
drink? How many?
54.
What?
What?
Hang on.
That's impossible.
That is impossible because of the alcohol.
54 per 100, it must be
per 100 milliliters. Per 100 mils, which is just 330, is it?
Still pretty low calorie, that.
Yeah, 150 calories.
Oh, my God.
You can get wasted and not put on and stay under 97 kgs.
No wonder Japanese people are so drunk and so thin.
So it must be sweeteners in that, then. Because if it's...
Anyone who tells you, right, that, like, artificial chemicals are bad for you...
drink strong zero.
Yeah, they're wrong, aren't they?
Because just in terms of the alcohol, it can't be far off that.
And all of the, you know, whole lemons which you must use to mix.
Well, I think the same thing with those. JB and I, and this is a much better conversation, but JB and I had a very brief conversation about protein yogurts earlier. And I can't believe how low they are. You get
the no
15-20 grams, or like 20 grams of protein in a pot, but you've only got like 190 calories.
Yeah, well, if you got basically no sugar and no fat, so every gram of protein would have 4 calories in it. So 20 grams of protein has 80 calories in it, and then you have a couple of grams of sugar.
This is the sort of chat that players talk about at the training ground, I imagine. What's your preferred type of protein yogurt, Tim?
Well, let's lead on to the strong zero. Do not drink strong zero if you're a professional athlete.
Do not do that. Yeah, so Bordeaux, very nice win. I was just disappointed for Bristol Bears. I was expecting more.
Yeah, and they were close, but I think they really backed themselves after the last couple of weeks of results where they've been, well, 2 tries down with minutes left on the clock. They backed themselves to be able to do it, and Bordeaux are a very good team. They're very organised, and Bristol having to attack allowed Bordeaux to put the pressure on and allowed them to capitalise on Bristol's mistakes.
It's Bordeaux's first ever quarter final in the Champions Cup. I am really disappointed because Bristol v Racing just had such a sexy feel to it as a fixture, didn't it?
You know, who was the title prop for Bordeaux?
Say that again, sorry.
You know, the title prop for Bordeaux?
Yes, Cobolas.
Still going strong. He's only 33. Steve Diamond must have picked him up young.
Yeah.
Came over to Sale from, I want to say Moldova.
Yep. Moldova, yeah.
Moldova. Best at table tennis, best at wrestling, great hands. Like, basically one of the best signings.
Has knocked over an international conversion.
Yeah. People don't realise how skillful he is at pretty much everything.
Yeah.
And, still winning games, which is awesome to see.
Yeah.
Dimes knows his players.
I mean, there's quite a nice prop pairing with Cobolas and Poirot. Jefferson Poirot.
Yeah, they made a really...
That's such a cool name.
Yeah.
They made a really interesting point in comms about this, which is Jefferson Poirot is the captain of Bordeaux. And they were thinking of other captains who were captain from Loosehead. And
or just prop in general.
Vickery and Haymans.
Phil Vickery, Carl Haymans.
Oh, yeah, good shouts.
John Schmidt did when he was hooker, moved across to tight head.
Yeah, that's a good shout.
I think Nick Mullins on comms said David Soule.
For Scotland, in the 1990 in the 1990 team that beat Murray beat England in the Grand Slam decider.
Did Tom Smith captain?
I don't think I
could be wrong. I don't think so. But my knowledge of 90s rugby is not.
Tom Smith was just a total workhorse, but he was a very very quiet man. I wouldn't have thought he was a skipper. Brilliant guy and player.
Yeah, I can't think of many.
Because there's been a fair few hookers.
Yeah, quite
over
a lot of
years.
Hookers.
But Loosehead's in particular, because
Loosehead's just the inferior prop, aren't they? The weaker of the two. There you go. So, anything else I want to say about this? Yes, I would like to say that Cameron Wockey intimidates me even via the TV.
Oh, I know.
Goodness me.
Yeah.
The back on the boy.
Yeah.
He's
all over the place. He's
so
in a good
explosive,
way.
Yeah.
He doesn't start for France, but, you know, it just tells you how good the French back
And he's young.
He is. And I've always quite liked Scott Higginbotham. I think he's a big boy. He's a very good carrier. He's an intelligent rugby player, and he's very good in that team. He's the kind of guy they need.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Any other games?
No, well, I'll tell you what. Let's look to the quarterfinals, and then we can jump.
No other games.
Jump across the
maybe
tracks.
One other game to
oh,
mention.
Yeah, go on.
Maybe one. I didn't watch it, so we don't really need to cover it much.
Did you didn't see it?
I've seen the highlights.
I'm wow. So disappointed with the Welsh regions. Bearing in mind that the national team's just won the Six Nations Championship, and they've made all this effort to get Welsh players back to the regions, and they've only got four, so they're teams are not diluted in the way that Premiership sides are, or even top 14 sides for that matter. And I'm really disappointed with the regions, and Scarlett's just symptomatic of that. We're just so poor with the players they've got. I mean, that's not to take it away from Sale, who were excellent.
Yeah, just on the Welsh regions, and guess the whole, it's exactly the same point as I made before. You know, if the Pro 14 isn't giving you tough competition, how do you gel as a squad? You can't just take half of your international team and hope that they play well. Scarlett showed up to this game with four Lions. You'd think that four Lions would be able to do some damage. It reminds me of the Exeter versus Cardiff game at Sandy Park, and Cardiff lost by about 50 points. Cardiff had five, maybe, it might have been seven British and Irish Lions in their team, and they still got spanked. Mm. I think they're going to have another look at this, because you can't just cruise through your league, roll over for Leinster each and every year, then show up with all guns blazing. But they've had no time together. They've had no time to form cohesion, bonds, combinations, all things that you need as a team. Whereas Sale rolled into this and they just spanked them. Absolutely spanked them. I don't think I've seen Sale have such an easy ride of it all season. Certainly not under Sanderson. Scarlets were completely incapable to deal with any of the physicality. They were so deep. There was a couple of decent moments from Jack Morgan. I thought he was reasonable. Everyone else just didn't show up. And these are not players that are known for not showing up. Wynn Jones, Ken Owens. They are good players.
Well, that could be part of a Lions front row.
Genuinely, in
2-3 months' time. Wynn Jones was probably the best loose-head prop in the tournament, in my mind. I thought he had a great tournament.
Yeah, Wilgriff dealt with him fairly easily, I think.
And rather than saying we played amazingly well, Alex Anderson said, I think we caught Scarlett's a bit cold.
I think Alex Anderson might look at that and go, that shouldn't have been 57 points. That should have been 70 points or 80 points. Because in the open exchanges, I thought Sale were completely dominant. They were unlucky not to come away with more. Now, when Scarlett's folded eventually, they completely folded. There's nothing that they could do. And, I'll give you an example. Like, across the field, they were not able to contain Sale. Out wide, Barry McGuigan was breaking a tackle every time he had the ball. And because he broke that tackle, then the guy who would be naturally jackling has then to go back around and make the tackle. Yeah. And then they can set up again. The Dupree, well, I say the Duprees, I think there's only one playing. I think there was one playing.
John Luke and
sorry. They were running over people for fun. Best that I've seen them play. And I think, actually, if they were a bit more disciplined and going to ground quicker, again, Sale would be even better. So that's all good. Bevan Rodd. Hear me now, believe me later. That is an England player. That is an England player.
It doesn't sound like an England player with that. He sounds like a Welsh player.
I think Wales would be delighted if he was a Welsh player. But if England are not picking him up very soon, I would be astonished.
So he's only like 21, isn't he?
Brilliant. Absolutely.
I mean, he looks like he's about 35.
Yeah. Langdon came on, made a huge impact. But I guess I think AJ McGinsey got 32 points, all told. And the genius of AJ McGinsey is he's got all these Mavericks around him. They don't know when to stop running. You know, you've got Faf weaving all sorts of magic. And it's his ability to put structure onto the game, which I don't think Rob Dupree can do. I don't think anyone can do. I think you've got to be an incredibly mature and sophisticated rugby player to be able to knit all this stuff together.
Well, have lots and lots of skills, but keep it, make it look very, very, do everything very, very simply.
Yeah. Because, you know, he knows he's got... I mean, imagine how hard it is to predict what a Dupree is going to do with what they run sideways, they bump people off, they've gone 2 or 3 yards further than they should do, they've thrown a ball over their head or beneath their legs in an offload, then you've got Faf doing Faf stuff. Bloody hard playing fly half a sail, and yet he does it really, really well.
On the flip side, it's always easier playing fly half when you're behind a very, very dominant pack.
Yeah.
I wouldn't feel too sorry for him. Those Poor Dupree age. Brothers ran further than he was expecting. Poor AJ.
Yeah, they blew out the ruck too quick.
Bevan Rod.
Yeah.
So he's 20 years old.
Yep.
He'll be 21 in August. He was born in Scotland.
Really?
But he's got England under 16, 17, 18. England honours.
If I was Scotland, I would cap him immediately.
Well, so he's listed on Sale's website. Do you know what position he's listed as?
I would say Lou said prop, but I'm guessing it's not then.
Well, it's prop and...
Flanker.
Hooker.
Oh, wow. Wow.
So
wow.
That, I mean...
God, that is exciting.
That's old school.
That is old school. So I wonder if he got a call... When, because obviously we've just had the Scottish hooker crisis of 2021.
Yeah,
he might have been on the list for that.
Maybe.
Although he's not. He's obviously not hooking.
Of course,
Sale.
They called up Ewan Ashman.
Yeah,
who was another group. I mean, I thought Langdon. I mean, it's going to be great to see who is going to be the number two at Sale, because looking at the way that Van der Merwe played, what? You think, well, he's got to be
Tommy Taylor will be number one.
Tommy Taylor's not been number one.
Taylor will be number two then.
Will he?
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't think he's as good as...
Don't you talk about my Tommy like that.
I think Langdon Langdon's the boy. And his dad's a Marine. There you go. What's Taylor's dad?
We'll see. Let's look at the quarterfinal. the quarterfinal matchups then. So, in order of broadcast...
Well, before we do, can we just touch on the other bit of news, which was the Mike Brown story?
Well, I mean, we can go on to the... Because we can do that in the context of touching on the Challenge Cup.
Okay.
So cool. Just like just to wrap up the Champions Cup with a nice bow on it. They're all on Saturday and Sunday. Two on Saturday, two on Sunday. 3 p.m. on Saturday, La Rochelle play Sale.
Ooh.
With a crowd, I'd say La Rochelle win that at home.
Yeah.
I think Sale have got a really good shout.
It does. Yeah. Look, styles make matches. And is Sale's power game going to work as well against La Rochelle as it does against Scarlets?
Well, clearly not. It won't work as well.
Yeah.
No.
And then, you know, if there's a slight change of momentum, do they keep up the energy? Do they keep up all that good stuff which makes them win? Or do they go into their shells a bit? Which is entirely a possibility. So, with that in mind, give me Sale by 20 points.
This is definitely one that Sale can win.
Yeah.
And I think you're exactly right, Tim, that if La Rochelle had a crowd, I would say they are favourites. Without a crowd, I think this is a coin toss. I think this could go either way.
I'm totally with you.
I think this would be a really good game because, JB, as you said, styles make matchups, and I think these two are nicely matched.
Yeah.
They are very well matched sized.
And the last time that Sale got to a European Champions Cup quarterfinal?
In San Sebastian.
In what year?
2008.
I think it was 2006, the year they won the league.
Was it real?
Exeter v Leinster, Saturday, 5:30 p.m. This is the one. I cannot wait for this game.
Yeah,
I'm so excited.
We travelled across the Irish Sea to watch this a few years ago.
Yeah, God, 3 years ago.
Yeah.
And by the way, the way that the games have been organised, with no disrespect to La Rochelle and Sale, because I'm really looking forward to that game, but that's a brilliant curtain raiser for Exeter Leinster. And then on the Sunday, Bordeaux Racing is a brilliant curtain raiser for Clermont Toulouse.
They're all great games.
Oh, they're such good games.
The more wins, the premium Heineken Cup brands are the latter games in both.
So exciting. Exeter Leinster, I cannot wait. How's it going?
Oh, I don't know.
Exeter
will do everything that we know Exeter can do, but they will they will find Leinster more difficult to break down than just about any team.
Yeah,
because Leinster are, they have the amazing combination of enormous amounts of experience in both Heineken Cup and international. Like, pretty much everyone in their team is an international player.
Well, it was, even without Gary Ringrose and James Ryan last weekend, every single one of their starting 15 was a full Irish international.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And even the guys that guys bringing off the bench who are not Irish internationals, like someone like Scott Fardy,
yeah,
who just such a, he's been such a smart acquisition because he covers a huge number of positions, and he's just very, very good and very experienced.
Yeah.
So this will, Leinster will be as difficult as any other team in Europe for Exeter to break down. And the bit Exeter have to do, is, which they do incredibly well, is trust their processes and trust their systems, because they are not, if Leinster go two tries up as Lyon did, it would take the full 80 minutes for Exeter to get the opportunity to come back into that game. They're not going to be, after 50 minutes, this game is not going to be over. This is going to be a full 80-minute match, yep, for both teams.
I think it's another coin toss, but I'm going to say Leinster come out on top of this one.
Exeter. I just think they've been more battle-hardened through the Premiership. They're ready to go. Exeter win their league at a canter. Nah, Exeter.
The battle hardens interesting because it's definitely true, but that week off might well it might well bode well for Leinster, because they've obviously had most of their players have been playing in Six Nations, which is incredibly physical. They then went straight into the Pro 14 final against a very physical Munster team. And a week off is probably just what the doctor ordered for Leinster, mm-hmm, so I think that will actually suit them quite nicely.
Yeah.
With that said, I really want Exeter to win.
You're willing it to happen.
Yeah. Give me Exeter by 3 points.
On to Sunday, Bordeaux v Racing 92.
Bordeaux versus Racing.
Racing win this.
I mean... Yeah, on paper I'd say Racing do. I don't really know enough about how they're both going domestically to say.
I can tell you now, Racing are third in the league, have won 13 out of 20. Bordeaux are fifth, won 11 out of 20.
Ooh.
So not an enormous amount in it.
I guess it'll be Racing then.
Yeah. I think Racing, but Bordeaux, I was very impressed with their ability to, well, fundamentally stop Bristol, which is, if you can stop Racing, and Racing probably a similar style to Bristol.
Mm.
They've got amazing runners, amazing distributors. I mean, when there was Beale and Zeebo both on the pitch in that last 20
Zeebo
minutes.
Zeebo rumoured to go into London Irish?
Yeah, potentially. Which,
he's old enough and he's expensive enough
to play in the forwards.
Well, yeah.
London Irish's back three, they don't need Zeebo.
No.
Look, I mean, they've got Naholo potentially to come back, but Parton, Ollie Hassel-Connellans and Ben Loader are class.
And you've got James Stokes as well.
Stokes, good. Yeah, very good. I wouldn't be spending a lot of money on Zeebo.
No, I wouldn't either. I don't think that's a good move.
But, yeah.
Just one thing I didn't mention earlier when we talked about Bordeaux v Bristol, and you mentioned the decisions, quite rightly, Phil, but what about what Austin Healey had to say about the, and this has been brought up before many times, about the French directors being selective with their camera angles.
And Pat Lam has intimated as much.
They don't have crowds. You need some sort of home advantage. I don't have a problem with it. I quite like the gamesmanship. I mean, yeah, I know, people wandering and say, it's not a great look for the sport. Fine, look, if you want to get the right angles, go into the director's truck and make it happen.
It's a very good point. Because the Dweeber try in particular, Higginbotham, they showed two angles which were totally, totally inconclusive. There must be, I don't know, 12 cameras in that stadium, 16 cameras. How you could only get two angles that were totally inconclusive?
Now, as far as I understand it, because the TMO is in the same broadcast truck as the directing team, in a different part of it, but in the same truck, they have access, as I understand it, the TMOs, to every camera. However, the one they will focus on most is the one that the director is selecting.
Interesting. Oh, so did Timo can say, look, there's a different angle here?
I think so. I don't know how it works.
It didn't, on reviewing of that Higginbotham potential knock-on, it didn't look like...
No.
Because you could not get anything conclusive from those two angles.
No.
Conveniently, you couldn't get anything conclusive from those two angles. And even
very strange how this happens from time to time, and usually in one direction.
Yeah.
And it'd be all right, wouldn't it, if it happened in both directions?
Yeah. But the Purdy knock-on over the line... plenty of absolutely loads of angles to see that.
Yeah, there was.
But the interesting one was the Jalibert try that was given as no try off the field.
Yeah.
And they had to combine two angles to make a decision, but neither one of them definitively showed the ball going down over the line.
Now, I thought the referee handled that quite well because he said that the ref said, I'm not sure if he was short.
Yeah,
or not.
We see the ball grounded.
Oh, I can see the ball grounded,
but we don't know where it was.
No. The ref said he was over the line. I don't know if it was grounded. The TMO looked at it and said, "I can see a grounding, but the angle doesn't show that it's over the line." And the ref put the two together and said, "Well, I saw him over the line. I just didn't know if he grounded it. You've seen a grounding. We'll put the two together. Let the boys play."
I think probably in that the right decision was made.
Yeah,
but it was interesting that they overturned the on-field decision without definitively...
That's true.
See, they didn't have the definitive evidence. You could, I think, logically, the conclusion... Yeah. They got to the right conclusion.
If it was a trial, the jury may well have said not guilty or no try with reasonable doubt.
Yes, yeah. No try with reasonable doubt. Or that just because of the... If you'd have asked the other question, if it had said on-field decision is a try, it definitely would have been a try.
Yeah.
And because he said on-field decision is no try... I think you'd be a little bit aggrieved, but I think in that one they actually got the right answer.
Final game, Clermont to lose. Such a good way to finish the weekend. There'll be games afterwards, but Sunday 3 p.m. I hope the weather's rubbish. By the way, not at the games. I hope the weather's wonderful at the games, but rubbish, so I don't feel bad about sitting indoors
all weekend.
I want Toulouse to win for no other reason than I love Toulouse. I just think they're cooler than everyone else. How it goes down, I don't know. I suspect Toulouse are the slightly superior team here.
I've always had a liking for Clermont, more so even than Toulouse. But I think this incarnation of the Toulouse team, it just represents everything that's good about French rugby.
Yeah, it does, doesn't it? It really does.
It's the...
Huge men, rapid backs...
Yeah,
swagger,
talented youngsters. Like seriously talented youngsters coming through that they've developed. So I think either one will be a handful. No matter who goes through, either one will be in with a shot of winning the title. I think Toulouse probably have a slightly better chance of winning the title overall. So for that, give me Toulouse.
Mm. Agreed. We could do a Challenge Cup podcast.
You could do.
Because people with those teams that might want to...
I don't think I've seen enough of it to do well, it justice.
I've only seen one game, really. That's the Irish one. It was awesome.
No worries, let's rattle through it then. Because Mike Brown, firstly, you're quite right. So he has been rumoured for months and months, rumoured to be going to Newcastle. It was confirmed this week. And Mike Brown didn't want to give a statement through the club. He gave a statement on his own in a newspaper article... and felt hard done by. Talked about finding out he was leaving and going to his car and crying.
Yeah.
Always sad to hear.
It is. Look, don't give the animals names. People giving Gustod a hard time for this, because it was Gustod conversation which he was referring to.
Yep.
4 minutes of Gustod. I seem to have known for quite some time through rumours that this was happening.
You're right. Mike Brown, what a lot of people have said is that's disrespectful to only give Mike Brown a 4 minute conversation when you're telling him he's letting him go. If you watch School of Hard Knocks in the NFL and you see an NFL coach, and in fact, there's a scene in Moneyball where Billy Bean, Brad Pitt plays, tells Jonah Hill's character, you can't sugarcoat it. When you're letting someone go, all they want to know is what's happening, you're going. You've been traded, you've been cut. So there is a balance. All I'm saying is, actually, if Paul Gustard had done a big Mike Brown's going, everyone get together, let's have a big celebration. So, you go to the other extreme. I'm saying there is a middle ground.
There is a middle ground, right? And I wonder if this is sort of, not to be unkind to Mike Brown, I don't want this to come across unkind at all, but look at the way that Rob Shaw left. We knew Rob Shaw was going for ages. They named a bar after him. You know, he had cheerleaders. He had all sorts of things going on. It seems to be like a whole year of Rob Shaw themed events. Now, if Mike Brown's known that he's going since before Gustard left, they could have done all that. Now, it could be a question like, did Mike Brown really not want to go so much that he was holding out that this, once the management team had changed, that he could stay? I mean, you don't know, do you?
Well, he did say in the Mail article that he tried, after Gustard left, he tried reopening that door and was told, it's shut.
Yeah, he told them, no, it's shut, and he also did mention that what they were offering him wasn't what he felt his market value was, i.e. Newcastle were offering him more.
And there you go.
Well, yeah, and that's where the business side of it comes to for me, because there's a lot of the emotional side, and I totally get there's the four-minute version, there's the five-hour PowerPoint of this is why you're so old, and these are all the tackles that you've missed, and we'll tell you in detail about how good all the youngsters are. And there's a middle ground, obviously. The 4 minutes doesn't... I'm not bothered about the 4 minutes. I would personally want it to be as short as possible if you tell me you're not going to offer me a new contract.
I doubt it was just like that one... I mean, he was rumoured to go to Exeter last year.
Yeah, but there's the business decision, which is Mike Brown will have been on a very good deal. We know a few years ago he was on a very, very good... All the England guys were on 300k plus, and that was when they weren't playing for England. Weren't playing for Quins as much because they were playing for England more. He'll still be on a very good contract. He's not worth as much as he was his deal 2 years ago or his deal 5 years ago now, but he still has a value. And actually, given how he's playing, he still has quite a significant value.
Yeah, exactly.
But his value to Quins might not be as high as his value to Newcastle at the moment.
100%.
And this is the bit that no one seems to be talking about, is the realistic business position, because it's a business.
Because you're right. Sorry, I'll just be very quick. Everyone seems to have, and it might be right about the 4 minutes. Paul Gustard may not have handled it the best way. Who knows? But everyone seems to be just going, Paul Gustard. But from what I read from Mike Brown, Quins also haven't offered him what Newcastle have offered him.
Yeah.
So it's not just Paul Gustard.
Yeah. So there's a few things weird about this, I think. Number one, Newcastle have a plastic pitch. Harlequins do not play on plastic pitches. So I don't know.
Do they not?
No, I don't know what the plan is there.
Really?
100%. Quins told me. So 100%. So that's a very weird one. You've covered off all the other points on Mike Brown quite well, I think, so I won't add anything more to that. Other Quinn stuff is, I am pretty certain at this point they are nearly done with signing Razi Erasmus for next year. So that'll be very interesting.
Wow.
Now, should the Razi Erasmus stuff...
That's huge if that happens.
Yeah. How do you feel about that? Just quickly.
Amazing for Quins.
Do you think that?
Yeah.
Phil?
I would like to see it, yeah. I think that is... Right, certainly in terms of coaching personnel in the world, he's as big a name as you
can
get.
Huge for the Premiership.
I've got my reservations, to be honest, because they're going well as it is, and they have a structure which requires a DOR, so currently a lot of people are chipping in. It would raise a few issues for me. Number one, Quins have made a lot of redundancies across their organisation. They've got rid of £300,000 worth of costs in there. Not a DOR, because, of course, Gustard was not a DOR, was he? He was head of rugby. So they're going to bring in either a DOR or a head of rugby. And I think when you're going so well and you've made redundancies, bringing in someone like Razi Erasmus, who... you've got to say, you bring in a guy like that, money must be no object. That's the sort of contract that you're writing.
I mean, that's an interesting point.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be the guy signing that contract knowing that I've let, other people go. So, yeah, mixed feelings on that. What if he comes in and doesn't like how things are done, or, you know, there's a culture clash? Quinn's going really well.
Could be brilliant for, well, as a selfishly, as an Englishman, it could be good for us. Please, can South Africa, if that happens, Peter de Villiers would be a great shout for your head coach. Please.
And I've also got one other theory, and I'd like to know, do you think Quinn's are doing well because Robshaw's gone?
No, because the uptick in performance didn't coincide with Robshaw leaving. It coincided with Gustard leaving.
Bear with me. So I have a theory. Robshaw walking out the door gave all those other lads, all those other senior lads, a bit of a sense of perspective that the end is nigh. So Kerr, Mahler, Brown, all of a sudden their good mate has gone out the door and is off to San Diego. And I just wonder if that's given the extra kick up the arse that they need to think, Christ, this team's disintegrating now. We've got basically one more year, and it is now one more year because Mike Brown's off at the end of the year, to win something. I think they were trying to prove now that their premiership title was not a one-off, that in fact, they've got to produce right now. I do think they've improved because Robshaw's left. I just wonder if it gives.
It's the kicker. Yeah, that is one potential to explain it. The Gustard is a more.
Yeah.
It's a more abrupt and obvious because basically the minute Gustard went out the door, the results went through the roof.
Yeah.
Like it's so aligned with that.
The only other way you could suggest that Robshaw played a role is that, much as with some other players perhaps, the contract he was on and was paying, actually they can get more value for the team overall by getting Tyrone Green and another player. I'm trying to think of another example of a new player.
You could
probably have got two or maybe three good first team players for Chris Robshaw's money.
Well, Tyrone Green, Archie White, and the guy who looks like the Burnley manager.
James Chisholm.
Chisholm, who's also playing really well.
Just on Mike Brown not playing on plastic pitches.
Yes.
He played against Saracens at Allianz Park in August last year. I've not gone back to do a massive deep dive, but
He definitely,
maybe he had some issues.
Yeah, he doesn't play much on plastic pitches, I can guarantee that.
That'll be interesting.
Yeah.
But So the Challenge Cup games, London Irish game was great. They looked
good.
It was
an awesome game.
It was a really good game.
Really good game.
Yeah, and London Irish, so they had the red card and then a yellow card. So they had, I always get his name wrong, I want to say Carrick-Smith, but it's Goodridge-Clark. Yeah.
So my question is, how few players do London Irish need in order to score the lineup? 10?
So they were down to 13 men at one point in the last 20 minutes, weren't they?
Yeah.
That back three is just electric. I love their back three.
They're cool, aren't they? Very, very cool. I love Loader. Such a spindly, skinny little thing.
Loader and Ollie
Hassel. I bet it's massive in real
life. Yeah. Ollie Hassel Collins as well. Because he hits like a train defensively and he's so fast.
And when he made that break right at the end.
Yeah. Yes. Crikey. Go on.
Crikey. Yeah. Good game. Good game.
Very good game.
Before we go on to anything else, anyone notice this New Zealand study? Has it come across your radar?
New Zealand study?
On concussions?
No.
So it's going to be the biggest ever study of concussions for amateur players.
Okay.
And it is
a which probably, you could probably achieve that by getting a study of studying 10 people. has there been a study of concussions at amateur levels?
The answer is I don't know.
Not really.
I mean, I don't know.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
I think you've got two things going on here. Concussions in the pro game, which are very, very serious, and what happens in the amateur game. And I think concussions as a group are serious. A concussion at amateur level can be very serious, but it can also be nothing. And we've got to be very careful, particularly in rugby coverage, when they're covering the pro game, not to paint concussions as if they're the end of the world, because we've all played rugby, we've all had a concussion, they all affect people differently, and you can have. I know a friend who has had to go down to part-time work. They can be incredibly serious. Mm. But there again, I played with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of players, and it's happened to one. So my worry about this concussion study is it's pretty much not a foregone conclusion, but the people who want to say, look, we told you rugby was dangerous, don't play it in schools, don't do this, don't do that, change all the laws, well, that's what they'll weaponise it for. And the people who want to continue playing it, even if you told me it's 20 times more dangerous than I perceive it to be, I would still play it. Because, you know, I just would. The only way this can go well is if they get this data and say, look, it's less dangerous than what we thought. But I don't think that's going to happen. And even if it did, they'd call whitewash, because some people, no matter what it says, would say, look, it's dangerous.
Yeah, the people who, no matter what comes out of this study, will use it for their purposes.
Well, we saw that with a report published earlier this week.
Very, very similar.
Even before that race report was actually published, no one changed their mind. Just said, that's rubbish because,
that's
brilliant because.
It entrenches people further into their views.
But, so we've got no baseline of how dangerous rugby is. The only thing we know is how dangerous I see it. As on a weekend, all the players that played before me, all the players I've played with, all the players I've played against. That's the only data that I have. That's the only data anyone has really at the amateur level. So no matter what comes out of this study, I'll say, oh yeah, knew that. I'll still play. And then everyone else who's against it will go, oh, I told you it's dangerous.
Yeah, so, you shouldn't be playing.
Yeah, but and again, that I think that so the one moral argument I can make is that for minors. Where a parent might have an influence on whether
like
a player plays or not,
or in one of the old coal towns.
Yeah, potentially you could argue that it can never be a bad thing to have data and evidence for people to make a decision. And in the case of where there are people involved who have parents who are a part of any decision making process, that can't hurt. I know that in my own, and this might sound crude and oversimplified to a lot of people, but as far as I'm concerned, for my own personal equation that I would draw, I think the benefits would far outweigh whatever this report says. And secondly, as long as boxing is still a thing, then I can't understand what reason I would have to stop playing rugby.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So particularly the argument on kids is they can't consent. It's I've listened to one sociologist stand up on a stage, loving the sound of his own voice.
Well, you shouldn't listen to sociologists, mate.
No, of course you shouldn't. But I had to do it. I had to do some research. And he's describing it as child abuse.
This is why proper empirical research done properly.
But it will make no difference.
An honest, good faith effort to test something and control variables. Sociology does not do that. They don't do research that's meaningful. They have an agenda, and they
believe you me. You don't need to convince me.
Okay,
I'm not the guy who needs to be convincing on the uselessness of sociology. There's that. Now the other thing as well I wanted to bring to your attention. Did you notice on comms, Lee Halfpenny's concussions were referred to as a brain injury? He came off with a brain injury.
No, I didn't.
Right. So instead of saying Lee Halfpenny's returned from concussion, they said it came back from a brain injury. How do you guys feel about that?
Was it just poetic license?
I mean, it's the same as saying a hamstring injury is a leg injury.
It is and it isn't, right? So
if he said head injury, you wouldn't have minded, would you?
If he said traumatic head injury or traumatic brain injury, I think I'd be less worried about it. So. The reason I don't like it is twofold. One, I think it is genuine fear mongering.
I doubt that was intentional.
Who said it?
It was Jamie Lyle on comms. Now, I will just add this. Jamie Lyle is a commentator who is incredibly poetic. I really enjoy listening to him, and I do think he was just searching for a different term.
Yeah, but okay.
Maybe he wasn't. Maybe he wanted to make that bigger statement, like, it's a brain injury. So the reason I don't like it is twofold. One, I think it is fear mongering. But two, it's an inaccurate description. So the argument goes something like, and this is from experts, and you can find this quite frequently, people saying we need to talk about concussions in terms of brain injuries. But they're hypocrites, because even these neurosurgeons who are the supposed experts, and they are the experts, actually, not supposed, but the actual experts, if I brought them a rugby player and said he's got a brain injury, they'd look at him and go, oh, right, yeah, he's got a concussion. That doesn't mean that they're underplaying it. In fact, if anything, if you take concussions seriously, the word concussion is more than adequate. So when they said like Lee Halfpenny suffered a brain injury, I'm thinking, what was he running and suffered like an aneurysm? What is this?
Okay, I've got maybe an analogy because I understand what you're saying, and I'm trying to use an analogy from something else that's quite topical. I haven't just brought up that race report. In the wake of the awful stuff that happened with Sarah Everard, there's a lot of people that talked about sexual harassment of women, and in doing so, in just talking about sexual harassment as a catch-all term, they lumped in someone going,
yeah,
with someone who aggressively, physically assaults someone, and the two are very, very different. But by using a phrase sexual harassment as an umbrella term to cover it all, you can be in danger of making the lower end seem more serious and devaluing what the upper end means. Well, is that kind of what you mean?
Kind of. Well, yes, but I will say this: you know, concussions are not serious. They're very serious, but they are. You know, we know if I say that someone's been concussed, I know he's probably taken a blow to the head. I know a lot about that situation, and I take concussion seriously. I don't need to be cajoled anymore to taking it any more seriously by changing my language. And just by calling it a brain injury, it doesn't make Lee Halfpenny's head any better. It doesn't stop the amount of concussions. The only thing which stops the amount of concussions, I guess, would be a change in the law. And I wonder if the reason they use this language is to further lobby for more changes of the law, or so we take it, quote-unquote, more seriously. And then they follow it up with something like, we need to have a serious discussion about concussions. Well, as far as I'm concerned, we've been having a serious discussion about concussions for the past 3 years now. And at the pro game...
Longer.
Yeah, it has to happen. They have to carry on studying it and work out what's going on. At the amateur game, we don't need to have many more discussions about concussions. The scenery in the grassroots has completely changed. Like, no longer would you ever keep anyone on. Even 5 years ago, you might keep someone on. You would never dream of doing that. It doesn't matter what the situation is. If you think he's got a head injury, you bring him off. There's nobody risks it.
Don't call it a head injury. I'm joking.
Look, I literally just did it. Yeah, head injury, actually, I wouldn't be too bothered about. But the terminology of brain injury, and also, where's the limiting principle? People were posting to me on Twitter, look, a concussion is a brain injury. Okay, well, why not just call it an injury then? You know, why not just call it an event? There's no limiting principle.
Yeah, I guess, actually, the World Rugby, for example, are very clear that they don't use the phrase eye gouge. They say contact with the eye area.
Yeah, which is code for eye gouge.
Yeah.
No, I don't like where the conversation's going. And it feels to me like there is a competition. Whoever speaks about concussion in the most shrill way possible is winning it.
That's what. Okay, so I think in this case, I don't think
Jamie Lyle did not do that.
No. I think it was pure poetic license. I think actually, it's not about the semantics of individual words. It's about the thrust of the conversation, which is basically you're saying, and I agree with you on this. Calm down. No, nobody is advocating for people to be hurt unnecessarily. We all accept there is a level of risk, and let's just calmly go through this journey of working out how we keep the sport, keep the risk which people understand and can make and can decide for themselves, but mitigate it in ways that we can where necessary.
I just thought it was odd, right? Because there is a push. There is definitely a push to call concussions brain injuries. You hear it. You do hear it from the experts, right? And for a game which is absolutely obsessed with its image, to the fact that, you know, we no longer see fights, we no longer see big hits on Twitter accounts, we no longer, you know, we're obsessed by the safety image. The fact that we now want to call these things brain injuries kind of rubs against the fact that they're trying to look after their image as a sport. So there's a lot of things going on here, but I think the word concussion, if you take concussion seriously, which I do, that word is enough. If you don't take concussion seriously, then you will be going down the road of brain injury. Or, of course, what you'd be saying is, I'm only calling it a brain injury, so you take it seriously. And I just think that's kind of detrimental.
I can't believe you had a 5-minute rant over the semantics of the word brain injury or concussion.
Well, think about it, though, Phil, because if you are watching this game for the first time, and rugby's whole shtick at the moment is, you know, our image, the commentator calling it a brain injury is pretty devastating.
But if you're watching it for the first time, you genuinely might not know what a concussion is.
I mean, if you've not seen,
I don't know. If you spend your time sowing and gardening, and doing general things, if you're not in the rough and tumble world of rugby, you might not.
I mean, I'm trying to focus on the thrust of what you're saying, which I totally see. I think the semantics, because I've just suddenly thought of one thing. HIA stands for head injury assessment.
Yeah. Well, because it's a head injury, right?
Yeah,
it is a head injury. There's no two ways about that. Yeah. But it's hit in the head. So, doesn't necessarily mean they've damaged their brain.
So it's like saying, a concussion is the equivalent of, like, say, ACL tear, which would be your the specific injury. Concussion is a specific injury. That happens to your brain in the same way as an ACL happens to your knee. That happens to your head in the same way as an ACL happens to your leg. It's just a more specific or less specific way. I'm not kind of triggered when I hear brain injury or concussion, because I know exactly what they mean when they say brain injury. I know exactly what they mean when they say concussion.
I think my problem is the manipulation of, or the attempted manipulation of the language. That is my problem.
And it's your perception of the attempted manipulation of the language.
And to be fair, JB, I can understand the thrust of what you're saying, mate. And equally, in other areas of society, I totally see how language is being... Well, perfect example, Antifa stands for anti-fascist. They're about as fascist as in what they do, with some of the stuff they do. But so semantics. However, on this particular point, I understand the thrust of what you say.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't my thought. This is the thought of the brain injury experts who want to call it we want to substitute concussion for brain injury, and I just don't see why. If you treat concussion seriously enough, concussion's fine.
Yeah, I'm happy with either term.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely not happy with brain injury. I'm not happy with brain injury as a catch-all on TV, because it's imprecise. You might be thinking,
it is less precise than concussion.
Yeah, if you're going to go for brain injury, there must be a reason behind it. The reason must be scary.
Otherwise,
just go with an injury.
Or equally, we can just desensitise it by saying, yeah, when you play rugby, you've got a risk of your ACL going from time to time. It's a dynamic sport, so you might break your ankle if you're really unlucky. Actually, you'll have an amazing time. Yeah, you could potentially get a little brain injury.
But you can see it. You can see it. A little brain injury.
That's what it is. You might get a bang on the head and feel a bit groggy for 10 minutes, and then you'll watch the rest of the game.
But you just see this cutting through on BBC News when everyone's watching it. Instead of talking about concussions in a grown up situation, which is a grown up discussion anyway. Instead, they're saying, "Well, in rugby, you have brain injuries," and people up and down the line, "Brain injuries? What? What is this?"
So I like something you said on the. The amateur game, the awareness has massively increased over the last few years.
Hugely.
Because I remember multiple seeing head injuries, concussion, whatever you want to call it, brain injuries, concussions. Yeah. Someone's banged their head and they're groggy. Let's just say that, because I wouldn't want to misdiagnose it.
Lewis Moody goes into a tackle, clearly gets absolutely battered, but and then carries on.
Years ago, and not standard. Even that many years ago, you used to see it at the highest level, but you would also see it at lower and lower levels because there wasn't enough awareness of the potential consequences and how serious and how it needs to be dealt with. The fact that awareness has raised, and it is raised right throughout the game, and there's still ones that are missed, but far fewer than there used to be. That's a good thing for all aspects of the sport.
Yeah. It raises an interesting question for me, which is, if concussion is an existential threat to the game, which I don't believe it is,
I don't believe it is.
I don't believe it should be. I think there are elements that it is, actually, but from the point of view that one of the biggest important areas for rugby to maintain and grow, ultimately, is, for example, getting it into schools and getting young people to do it. And I think that there's a safetyism culture. And I've seen this with my kids growing up, and I don't know what you find it, but there's this kind of... People don't let their kids go to the park.
No.
Or climb a tree.
Or go and pick up my cigarettes.
Yeah. So there's going to be a lot of parents that are going to go...
Make you a Negroni.
No, genuinely, there's going to be a lot of parents that go, oh, no, you're not playing that, it's too rough. Just like climbing a tree is too rough, and going to the park on your own and being out of sight of a grown-up.
So the existential threat to the game is clearly in the professional ranks. And I do have a lot of sympathy for that because... Yeah. It's a bloody hard decision to make. Do I carry on and play for that new contract? Do I give up the game, give up my 300K and become, a teacher? What are my options? That is an existential threat, of which I agree. I am not worried in the slightest about the amateur game, unless the rule changes in the pro game are so radical that it changes the game to something that we don't want it to be.
Well, that hasn't happened yet.
No, but that would be my thought. It's a risk, existential threat to the pro game, to the game that I play, and the game that hundreds of thousands of people play every year. Not really a threat.
Challenge Cup.
Yeah, how mental was that Northampton game?
Didn't see it.
Oh, it was bonkers.
I saw the Bath game.
Northampton were miles down to Dragons. Dragons were looking like they're cruising it, and Northampton score two tries in the last couple of minutes. It's an insane match. I watched it on the train on the bus from
first class train
Dublin and Limerick.
Helicopter.
Helicopter. It's a little coach between Dublin and Limerick.
Who's on the coach?
Just the crew, and there was six of us.
The crew, is that what you call Brian O'Driscoll? Is it? Is he
in the crew? No, he doesn't travel like that. Just
do you know how Brian O'Driscoll gets
producer, director, PA, and
do you know how
else?
Brian O'Driscoll gets the airport from big events? Do you film?
I do, because I was there when he told
on
you
on the back of a motorcycle.
On the back of a motorcycle. Weaving through traffic.
Well, that's
like a hero.
That part of the reason is when he does a lot of stuff in the studio. A bit at the BT studios, he then gets a flight from like Stansted or somewhere, and there's quite often very, very little time to get onto his plane. I imagine, because he's travelling Aer Lingus, I imagine he probably saves time because he doesn't even have to bother with a passport or anything. On you go, Brian.
That's the way to travel.
Yeah.
So there's a few comebacks. There's obviously London Irish. Bath found themselves three tries down. It was 14 points, then 21 points.
So this is an interesting game. I watched it, and it was interesting because Bath turned it round basically all through Will Stewart. Like, just literally through Will Stewart. He was dominating scrums, winning penalties. I think he might have scored a try. But all right. And the best part about this was half-time. BT Sport assembled an expert panel. One was Jordan Murphy, and the other one was King of the North.
Oh, Dimes.
Steve
Dimes.
Dimes
was on, wasn't he? I didn't see it at all.
Yeah, he was awesome. He's genuinely really, really good.
A few good one-liners.
Do you know what I liked? He's basically the Steve Diamond, which I see saw at Sale week in, week out, which is he analysed the game. So exactly what he saw. Craig Doyle was like, Zebra got a fighting chance here, trying to G everyone up. No, they don't. No, they don't, Craig.
You're right. That's completely honest. That's not what you want to hear before a game, though, is it? I'm sure that as much as people would have absolutely loved him being himself, and that's great, and that's really good value, that there will have been some people in the gantry going, no, don't say that.
I would turn off in about 10 minutes' time. But you now know Steve Diamond knows exactly what he's talking about. So when he finally does, I don't know, whatever he's going to do next, the European Cup final, and he says it's going to turn in the 80th minute via this, that and the other, well, there's a good chance of it happening.
Dimes knows things.
I'm telling you now. Mm.
What were the other games? Leicester had a very good win.
Very good win. They look good. Yeah. They look really good.
And this was a mixed team for Leicester. This was not a full-strength team at all.
Telling you, they are the team that are going to put the pressure on Quinns.
I've got to say, I had that in my mind when you said it, and I thought, they're better than... They're getting better all the time.
Yeah, no, and I think next season they will be properly pushing for top four, should be.
No obvious weaknesses. Very well organised, very gritty. Yeah, good team.
Mm. Yeah, and my beloved Ulster... I mean, hammered Harlequin's second
they
team.
They absolutely pumped Harlequin's B team.
Yeah, and it was a proper pumping as well.
They do need a rest, though, the Quinns.
Yeah, I think Quinns rightly rested.
Yeah.
They want top four. They should be able to get top four in the league, and the Challenge Cup was just a step too far season.
That top four fight, one, two and three are settled as far as I'm concerned. Maybe Sale crumble, but looking at what they were like on the weekend, looks unlikely. That fourth position, though. Battle Royale.
I think seeing the Quinns team that they put out against Ulster made me think, actually, they've got the fourth place. I think the top four might... Not wrapped up, but I think that it won't change.
I think they have Leicester 2 weeks after the resumption of the league. Mm. That'll be the test.
Yeah.
Yeah, if they win that, I think we're all settled.
Yeah, then we know. And then we know exactly.
We can basically fold up the podcast then, can't we, till till the next important game?
No, because we'll be covering the Rainbow Cup.
Of course we are.
And we can cover a bit of Super Rugby Aotearoa, although my beloved Canes are bottom of the table.
How are they? How are my Wonderful Blues doing?
They beat my beloved Canes. They're second. More importantly, the Crusaders lost.
What?
To the Highlanders.
What was it, a fix?
It must have been.
My Landers with their lumberjack shirts.
Well, yeah. Funny you mention this. I saw a picture on... about Audie Surveyor play it. No, Julian Surveyor play it.
Yeah, Surveyor's back. Yeah.
I read something this week about people complaining about Julian Surveyor that every time there's a Highlanders game that he has a party.
No, so there was...
What happened?
So there was a few, I don't know, several of the Highlanders squad...
I like him even more now.
...have been stood down. I think it's some of the young lads because they were partying, noise violation, that kind of stuff.
Noise violation? I thought you were going to say something cool like... Yeah. Noise violation. No,
it's something
that's the
like
worst
that. I've seen a few little bits. I've not got the full story.
Hey, bro. Keep it down, bro.
But yeah, so Highlanders.
I'm sure I saw a quote. I might be talking out of school here. I'm sure I saw a quote. Something along the line of, every time Highlanders play, there's a massive party. I can hear every beat. So I wish I lived there. Hear every beat. Grow up. Like, what do you expect when you live next door to a 20-something-year-old megastar?
Parties at Joshuani's house.
Yeah.
Out of hand. I want to get an invite to Joshuani's
house. Out of hand.
Out of hand does not mean it was a bit noisy. Like,
Dunedin house party, say the revelry had been getting worse over the past few months.
Good lads.
Joani, alongside a few others, Joani's the only one I recognise of these guys. After police were called to a house party on Friday night following their loss to the Hurricanes, neighbours confirmed they've been going on for some time.
What? Well, like, how long do they expect the party to
go and join in? Let the boys play.
Yeah.
Could they hear?
So hold on, but why are they getting stood down from their rugby playing job for what they do in their own time? It's not like... Because there's no COVID restrictions or anything in New Zealand. So what?
Nothing. Presumably it's... a clubhouse, and the police have been called to an incident at a clubhouse.
Oh, okay.
So I can understand an investigation into it.
That's what I'm saying. I want something meaty to have happened at this thing for them to be stood down. Not just they were being a bit noisy and upset the neighbours.
Several goats were killed.
Who knows? It sounds like a bit of a non-story.
Sounds like a great story.
It sounds like quite a good party.
And it gets progressively better over the weeks.
Yeah.
like the IP this season.
That's good. That's what I was going to say. You want people to... They did their Monday morning meeting as a household. How can we make next week's party better?
Hot tub, bro. Well, good on them. So, anyway, the thing I was going to say about them is there was a picture on social media. And it struck me because I assumed that they had one single type of lumberjack shirt, but they don't. They have multiple colours of lumberjack shirt.
Have they?
Yeah, which you can wear to show your affiliation to the Highlanders. Which I think was really, really cool.
Tim, you need to get your hands.
I need to get my hands on one of these lumberjack shirts.
I wish it someone else... So, a unique sports memorabilia. I honestly think that the Pittsburgh Steelers terrible towel is up there. And the Highlanders lumberjack shirt must be... I can't think of anything else.
Racing 92, the bow ties and blazers.
Bow ties are excellent.
The bow tie that wouldn't fit around Camille Schatt's neck.
What's the club? Was it... the Harlequins blazer?
Harlequins blazer is good, but that's just a boat... I mean, there's lots of boating blazers.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, Harlequins kit is iconic.
A club which is local, it's always had great social stash... is Stockport.
Yeah.
So they went a few years ago. Do you remember when the pink shirts were pink shirts were quite trendy with like a blue stripes down them? That sounds awful, but you like the Ralph Lauren ones.
Okay. Yeah, no, so like going out shirt.
Going out shirt.
Oh, right, yeah.
So going out shirt, button down, like salmon, but with like very thin blue lines down. They were quite cool for a little while. Well, Stockport had their own, and they had so it looked like a Ralph Lauren shirt, but it actually had a little Stockport.
Little Stockport, that's quite cool.
And they had another one which I saw because I used to see them out in Didsbury, when we weren't prisoners in our own home. I saw them in. They had tank tops one year, like every for a while. Every year they had like a different item of social going out gear.
I like that.
And you couldn't notice, you wouldn't notice Stockport. So yeah. You
know,
it's three or four.
Do you know, the other thing I just thought, the iconic garments that clubs wear, mustard chinos at Bath.
Mustard chinos, or faded red. Like, you know, you buy a pair of red chinos, you get your... you get your house staff to wash them several times.
Yeah.
And then you go
two dozen times. Bit of bleach.
We need to get some sartorial egg chasers, a sartorial egg chasers range. A gentleman, gentleman's range.
Yeah, we had the ties for a little bit.
We got the
Akuma shirts.
Yeah, the Akuma shirts. But again, it's not.
We need something more sartorial. Like, yeah.
Flat caps. We are in Manchester.
I'll tell you what, I could do with a flat cap. Because I need my hair cut so badly.
You need your hair cut so badly.
Yeah. I've got to go on TV with this haircut.
TV,
yeah. I don't want to say this in front of you, Tim, because it's awkward. You work with these people. But since lockdown, the BT Sports they've started to dress down. That's what I'm saying. They're all in hoodies now.
Not BAFEs.
No, BAFEs is the exception.
Never BAFEs.
Either in hoodies or... Yeah, I accept that sometimes it's cold and you need to have a body warmer and a jacket. But when it first kicked off over at BT Sport, they all looked great. And I think lockdown has encouraged them to not look so great. We've got lots of trainers, got some tight jeans. I'm just saying it's been noted. Everyone looks smart, but not as smart as they used to.
Maybe it's appealing to a broader demographic, perhaps.
Maybe
it's a conscious choice.
Look, lockdown happens for an extra 12 months, and I predict that they're going to be doing it in their pyjamas and dressing gowns.
Joggers.
Yeah.
That was the one good thing about working at the weekend, is actually just wearing clothes.
Yeah.
Felt good.
I'd do to wear a jacket.
Yeah. So the quarterfinals in the Challenge Cup are... London Irish West versus London Irish East.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I think London Irish West will edge that.
No, give me London Irish original brand.
Ooh. I'm with you, Phil. I think London Irish will do them.
London Irish original.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Bath still have designs on doing things in the league, so they might mix and match their team a little bit, maybe.
I understand they're going for it full bore.
Are they?
I think they'll go full bore. Yeah, that's a tasty game.
Because also, they got spanked pretty hard by London Irish last time round.
So that's the Friday night game.
Yeah.
Friday 8 p.m.
That'll be the only game on Friday then.
Yep.
Yeah, so we'll be watching that.
Yeah, that's good. Saturday, Leicester v Newcastle.
Tigers.
12:30 p.m. kickoff.
Tigers. We've seen this a few weeks ago.
Yeah, I think Tigers will win. I think Tigers will win this one. But never all Newcastle out, obviously. Montpellier, Benetton. Meh. Montpellier.
Benetton to get their third win of the season.
After dispatching Stade Francais.
Stade Francais and Agen.
Yeah, they're clearly big top 14 big game hunters.
They are, so you don't get too much bigger than Montpellier.
Nope.
With their enormous South African pack.
Nope, yeah. They'll beat them hands down.
And Northampton face Phil's beloved Ulster.
I wish I could go to that game.
Northampton Ulster? Where is it?
Franklin's Gardens.
Franklin's Gardens, yeah.
When did the restrictions lift for sports grounds?
After that.
Yeah.
Sadly.
It's a real shame.
Give me Ulster.
Yeah, I think Ulster. I think Ulster are going to win this.
I think Ulster as well. Although, again, the spirit Northampton showed, I would not rule them out. They did so well to win that Dragons game.
Ulster winning that. I think it's going to be Ulster-Leicester final.
So what is... And the semi-final will be a draw, so we're saying that it's going to be London Irish, I'm saying Bath, Leicester-Montpellier, Ulster. That's a pretty tidy...
Montpellier, they've got all this talent, but they're weak... They're weak-willed. They lose big games.
Mm. Any other business? Any other TV shows you've been watching that you recommend?
I am watching so much Grand Designs at the moment. I'm obsessed with Grand Designs.
Well, I built a digger.
You did build a digger.
Excavator.
An excavator, yeah. I built a... can't even say the name of the brand, though.
Lego Technic.
Liebherr.
Right.
A Liebherr 9800, Tim.
Sorry.
Yeah, very, 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 very proud of that. I'll be coming down to the Rugby Dungeon soon, and I'll be shouting at the kids, it's not a toy, over and over again.
You can help me with my own grand design with that excavator.
I absolutely can. It's bloody enormous.
One show I really like, by the way, I really like Naked and Afraid, but it's a weird one to watch when one of your kids walks in and says, "What are you watching?"
What is it? I've never even heard of it.
It's really good, and it's not.
Are they afraid?
It's not gratuitous in the way that it sounds. You get it's like a survivalist type show. You get two wannabe kind of survivalist types, and they get dropped in the middle of somewhere on Earth, in a really inhospitable place, like in the jungle or wherever, and they have to survive for 21 days. And they have they're naked when they start, and they just have a little Hessian bag.
Wow!
With, and they're allowed to take one tool with them. So sometimes they take a firelighter or a knife or a whatever, a net, and that's all they have. And they have to survive 21 days. They can tap out and say I'm done. But it's really cool.
Is it a bit like
if you gave me 21 days in an inhospitable environment? The only tool I'd need is my knowledge of capitalism, and I have a financial district and a metro running within 3 weeks.
Is it a bit like Terminator 2, where Arnold Schwarzenegger appears in the present at that time, naked, and says, "I need your boots, your boots,
your clothes, your boots, and your motorcycle." Yes.
Yeah. What exactly happens if you show up in like 13 days' time and he's wearing the skin of another human?
it's cool. Anyway,
what was this from? cut.
But it was quite embarrassing when my son walked in and there was just two naked people on the thing and the. What are you watching? And then saying it's naked and it's called Naked and Afraid.
Just a program. One of Daddy's programs.
Why are the lights off, Dad?
The boring one I'll tell you about is the chef show on Netflix. Absolutely love that show. I watch it religiously over and over again.
Is that with the guy from Friends in it?
John Favreau.
Yes.
He turns out to be a marvellous maker of television. He randomly also wrote Mandalorian.
Mandalorian, yeah.
Which is incredible. What range is that?
Wow.
It has like enough... it assumes that you know something about cooking, so it's not patronising and it's not all airy-fairy and, what's the word for it? It's not too arty.
Okay.
Not too up itself.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that would be my TV show. But at 2 hours eight, who cares?
Who cares?
2 hours eight.
I know. I don't know how we got to that.
Wow.
Well, no, I'm not. Time flies. I'm not remotely surprised, however.
Mm.
Standard.
Two last things. Plug this week, Rugby Dungeon. Josh Bayliss will be out anytime soon. You can watch that on YouTube, which is great. And
did you swoon? You're a big Bayliss fan.
I tell you what, I am a big Bayliss fan. And he's a lovely boy. Lovely boy.
Handsome man as well.
He is. And the other one is Will Evans, who will be on.
Oh, nice.
Sometime midweek.
Yeah. Who's your archetypal seven in the traditional system?
Yep.
But
be an eight,
an eight in the new JB back row system.
Right, we're contacteggchasers@gmail.com. Your emails, your thoughts. We'll have to do another Q&A pod. We do a monthly one, and it's now the start of the month, so we'll have to do that.
You're going to be taking home that dragon shirt, and you're going to be taking home that whale shirt and posting them to the appropriate people.
Yes, I am. And we'll do the shirt giveaway on the next podcast as well.
Perfect.
And we'll do a Q&A podcast soon. So contacteggchasers@gmail.com, @jbeardmore. I'm @Cocker. We're @rugbypodcast. Hit subscribe on YouTube and let the boys play.
Yeah, boys play.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.